In which case some of his comments may have some form of salience. If he wasn't, and he wasn't, then they don't. But my learned colleagues right across this so-called profession will spend today, everywhere, from the BBC down, will spend today pretending that it's debatable, pretending that it's an argument, pretending that somebody speaking undiluted racist gibberish might actually have a point. Oh, boy.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Andy Burnham has added to criticism of Manchester United co-owner Sir Jim Ratcliffe's comments about immigration. Sir Jim claimed the UK has been colonised by immigrants. The Mayor of Greater Manchester has called the remarks inaccurate, insulting and inflammatory. The Liberal Democrat Deputy Leader Daisy Cooper has told LBC Sir Jim should apologise.
We can have a debate about immigration. We can have a debate about the asylum system. We can have a debate about skills training and how that interacts with immigration numbers and all the rest of it. But having the debate is very separate from the language that we use. And I think that the language that he used was inappropriate.
A 13-year-old boy has been charged with attempted murder over a double stabbing at a school in northwest London. The attack happened on Tuesday. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight has more details.
The teenager, who can't be named because of his age, is accused of trying to kill a 12 and a 13-year-old boy, as well as spraying a third child with insect spray at Kingsbury High in Brent. Counter-terrorism police are continuing to investigate the attack, and the 13-year-old is due in court later this morning.
The UK's economy grew by 0.1% in the final quarter of last year. The Office for National Statistics says 2025 was a year of subdued growth. Draft legislation to clamp down on foreign funding of political parties is being brought to the Commons by the government today. The Electoral Commission will be given more powers to impose fines of up to £500,000 on those that breach the funding rules. The bill will also extend voting rights to 16 and 17-year-olds in all UK elections. And a Ukrainian skeleton athlete has been disqualified from the Winter Olympics because of his helmet. It featured pictures of people killed in the war with Russia. Vladislav Heraskaskovich said that he wouldn't compromise on the issue. The International Olympic Committee ruled it went against its rules on political statements. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 32 at 10,504. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with rain moving northwards. Scotland and northern England will see some patchy rain and hill snow at times, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Tesco Finest Sourdough. The real breadwinner. Untoasted, really toasted. Or buttered right to the edges. Whatever floats your toast, it's delicious either way. It's why only the finest bakers take 24 hours to carefully craft our sourdough. Mm. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Just a couple of funny facts, if that's the right word to choose. My cursory research into these matters, and it has been very cursory, has revealed that the population of Monaco stands just shy of 40,000, of whom about 8,000 are Monégasque, as in native. Monégasque is the word for what we would probably lazily and monoglottishly describe as Monacan or something like that. So if you wanted to talk about a territory where the native-born population is horribly outnumbered, if that is the kind of language you like, or just massively outnumbered, if you want to confine yourself to fact rather than feelings, then Monaco, where Jim Ratcliffe is in fact an immigrant, would be absolutely top of the list. And, of course, the other element of his ludicrous comments are, or display, complete ignorance of what colonised means, complete ignorance of our economy and the relationship between immigration and wage growth, and complete ignorance about the actual numbers. The statistics that he cites are completely wrong. If he was that wrong when putting together some of the chemicals that he has made his fortune from selling, then people would probably die. Ignorance kills in many fields. In this particular field, talking about immigration, well, of course it can kill racism, as we know. I was in court yesterday to see the latest case being brought against a British newspaper, and it involves the mother of a man who was killed by racism, or by racists. Doreen Lawrence is one of the people bringing the case against the Daily Mail Group. I'll tell you a little bit more about what I saw in court yesterday later in the programme. But it's just worth noting that if Sir Jim Ratcliffe were displaying such absolute ignorance in other fields, nobody would be sitting here wondering whether he might perhaps have a point. And that's where we've come to now. Here is somebody saying something very racist, very wrong, very unpleasant and very offensive. Shall I now take calls from people who are completely unaffected by his comments, who want to argue that it's not offensive at all? No. Shall I now take calls from people who want to completely ignore the fact that this is racist, wrong and factually stupid, and pretend that it isn't, or does he perhaps have a point? I mean, what would you have to say to set that phone in up? Well, he's wrong about the facts and he's wrong about the reality, but he has a point, doesn't he? What does that mean? Should we dig into that first this morning? Well, he's wrong about the facts, and he's wrong about the numbers, and he's wrong about the people, and he's wrong about the country, but he kind of has a point, doesn't he? Well, what point does he have? You know what point he has. You may be nodding along with it. You may be absolutely welcoming the people who allow you to pretend that this is anything other than what you know in your, what passes for your soul. You know what this is. This is an invitation to articulate the fact that when you see a face that isn't white, you don't like it. That's all this is. Should Jim Ratcliffe apologise? Does Jim Ratcliffe have a point? Every other phone-in on the planet will be dancing around this simple fact. Give me a ring and admit to me that you don't like seeing non-white faces. That would be the only honest phone-in to have in the context of these comments. With people who are not, of course, directly affected by racism. A long queue of white people who would be poised to argue either that this isn't offensive or that he has a point. He doesn't have a point. How can you tell whether someone's an immigrant or not just by looking at them? Oh, wait. Seriously, how can you tell? You can't. So how can you tell? Who's he talking about? He's not talking about people he's counted because his numbers are absolutely bogus. Oh, yeah, of course, I don't know. Oh, yeah, that must be an immigrant because they're not white. Can't be English if you're brown. Rishi Sunak can't be English was a recent radio phone-in elsewhere. These are not debates. These are invitations to racists to articulate things in public that they've been too ashamed to say out loud for a generation. The triumph of what was called political correctness was that these words, these languages, these attitudes were excised from public discourse. They were confined to the dark corners of UKIP meetings or Nigel Farage's sitting room. They were not permitted. They were certainly not welcomed into polite society. The idea that a conservative politician could complain about the number of non-white faces he saw on the streets of a British city would have been a sackable offence under every single conservative leader since at least Ted Heath and probably Macmillan, but not under Cammy Badenoch. You're just seeing the erosion of decency in this country at the moment. And the ultimate irony is that the people doing it are the people most responsible for many of the problems that we're currently facing, because Jim Ratcliffe was, wait for it, a Brexiter. So inflicting economic damage upon a country he no longer lives in to go to help colonise Monaco by outnumbering the actual native residents by a ratio of about 4-1, and then offering up a statistically illiterate description of the United Kingdom. And, I don't know, sitting back and lighting a cigar well, the erosion of decency in this country moves one notch further. Ah, give me a ring and tell me how racist you are on a scale of 1 to 10. Is that the phone in? Give me a ring and tell me how upset you are when you see a brown face on the television or possibly on your own street. Vote Labour if you want an N-word for a neighbour is a poster that went up on the streets of Birmingham within living memory. And we're heading back in that direction. We're heading back in that direction. And, everything I'm saying is just true. And you're perfectly entitled to be racist. I'm sorry, you're perfectly entitled to disagree with me. It's not illegal. There's some things you won't be allowed to do in public at the moment. For example, call for a hotel full of people who've done absolutely nothing wrong to be set fire to in their beds. But you'll be a bestowed hero status by Nigel Farage and his mates if you do that. If you break the law by encouraging people to burn human beings to death in their beds for the crime of having been born brown, then you will be rendered a hero in the pages of some newspapers and in the eyes of some politicians. So what is the phone in? Because it's none of the ones that anybody else is going to have. They are not debatable points. His numbers are wrong. His conscience is screwed. His qualifications are zero. His input is vile. His words are racist. Facts, not opinions, just counting. So, how do we have a phone in about it? The UK has been colonised by immigrants, really, hasn't it? What sort of telescope is he looking at the country through from his Monaco mansion? I can't even begin to imagine how warped your brain has to be to arrive at a conclusion like this. We also fetishise wealth, don't we? I mean, Elon Musk, if Elon Musk has taught us anything, it's that you can make immense amounts of money and still be a complete prat. And to be a little bit more sympathetic, perhaps, you can make immense amounts of money, you can be some of the richest men in the world, and still be obviously and measurably miserable. You can still be consumed by precisely the sort of bigotries and ignorances that they like to pretend are somehow the preserve of the working class. Two things going on. We fetishize wealth. We think that because someone's made an awful lot of money, they must have a skill set that qualifies them to contribute to other conversations. Oh, he's made an awful lot of money. I bet he'll be good at running a football team. Oh, he's made an awful lot of money. We should listen to his comments about immigration. He's made an awful lot of money. Balzac or Tolstoy, I never remember which one. Behind every great fortune, there is a great crime. It doesn't have to be a crime in legalistic terms, but in moralistic terms, it almost always is. I used to cite Bill Gates at this point as a rare exception to the rule, but he's all over the Epstein file, so I'm not even sure we can do that anymore. And the other bit of this is that racists love to pretend that it's a working class trope. Middle class and upper class racists absolutely love to pretend that these are working class concerns when they're nothing of the sort. You can sit in a mansion in Monaco and be a massive racist and pretend that you're somehow voicing the concerns of the silent majority. Spoiler alert, they're not silent and they're not a majority, but they are racists. They are people who see a face that is brown and have a negative reaction. They are people who see a crime committed by someone who is brown and openly admit now that they think that's much worse than when an identical crime is committed by someone who is white. It is the erosion of decency. And if we are really to start complaining about colonization, then you can only conclude that you're dealing with someone who's never opened, let alone read a history book. Because that is hypocrisy on a scale that would be visible from space. So they fetishize wealth, they demonize the working class or ordinary people, and they also, of course, have a completely bogus memory of what this country used to be like. It's like a kind of Facebook meme made flesh. And because he's very, very rich, it's a very, very big story. I don't know whether he'll apologize, but if he does, he won't mean it, will he? He won't mean it. Next thing he'll do is probably join Reform. In fact, here he is. He praised Reform UK leader Nigel Farage, I'm not making this up, as an intelligent man. Nigel Farage is many things, but intelligent ain't one of them. Jim Ratcliffe is many things, but emotionally intelligent, he is not. What is it like to be on the wrong end of this rhetoric? What's it like to be living in a country where racism has never been excised, but it used to be very much in retreat? I think sometimes those of us who have been and remain animated by all forms of bigotry and prejudice were a little unkind, a little unfair upon our native country when we complained about race. It was right to complain, and this may be, of course, white privilege talking. But we have been historically much, much better than many, if not all, other countries. We have been historically a place, a country where people would feel welcome. And I'm not being naive. I know that we endured horrible, horrible people and positions and policies throughout the 1970s and well into the 1980s. But the sort of, the period from, and I don't know what dates you'd put on it, from maybe 1990 to 2010, it just felt, and again, I acknowledge this may be white privilege, but I really don't think it is. I was talking to Sadiq Khan about it on Tuesday, and he was simply describing what he would endure growing up, people would shout at him on the streets of his Tooting council estate, and at his black friends as well. But he also described how his white friends would be as outraged by what was being shouted at him and his black friends as they were. There was a community, a sense of solidarity, something that to me is beautifully human. I was going to say British, but it can happen anywhere. It happens everywhere. There's something about immigration into this country, from the Commonwealth in particular, that should have created a much greater sense of cohesion, and for a while it looked like it was doing. But the P word and the N word are back on the lips of many people, both publicly and privately. Social media is awash with base and hideous racism. It has become a commoditized business model on Elon Musk's platform, where people are literally being sent checks by his company because racism triggers people, and triggering people creates responses. But I am a 54-year-old white man, and it don't really affect me. Breaks my heart. Sickens my patriotic soul, because I hate to see my own country get poisoned by people like Farage and Jim Ratcliffe and the other fella, Hester, who still hasn't had his money sent back by the Tory party, despite describing Diane Abbott as being somebody who makes him want to shoot black women. Straight into phone-in territory. Has he got a point? Should he apologise? It's incredible arrogance. Should he apologise? Has he got a point? Has he got a point? Should he apologise? No, he hasn't got a point. I don't care whether he apologises or not, because if he does, he won't mean it. This is what passes for his conscience. These are the views that he clearly holds in private, and he's so rich that when he shares them, nobody probably dares to say anything to him. Maybe, I don't know if he's got children. Often it's children who can stand up to their parents and point out that this is just unacceptable. But maybe there's nobody like that in his universe. Same with the Tory donor who said Diane Abbott made him want to hate all black women and that she should be shot, just to be technically correct on precisely what he said. I want you to tell me what it's like at the moment. A very prominent British Asian politician, I may have told you who it was in the past, but I can't remember whether or not I'm allowed to, told me about 3 or 4 years ago that they were looking at emigration, looking at, because the direction of the traffic in the country was so ugly. And I wanted to reassure them, but of course, I'm not walking in their shoes. I wanted to tell them that things weren't that bad. But of course, that would be like me ringing in to a radio station to describe comments that are deeply offensive to someone else as not being offensive. That's an incredible position to adopt. Oh, this isn't offensive at all. What do you mean by that? Well, I'm white. Racism doesn't offend me. Yeah, but that's not really what offensive... Oh, never mind. Never mind. Let's go to the news. I want to know what it's like to be in a country where racism is back in fashion. What is it like as a member of an ethnic minority to be living in a country where racism is back in fashion? I wish there were a different phrase I could deploy at this moment, but I don't know what conversations you're having with your children about it, or with your partners, with your parents. Racism is back in fashion. Racism has, like, flared trousers come back round again and is back in fashion. It's still disgusting, it's still ignorant, it's still dangerous, but it's back in fashion. Jim Ratcliffe will suffer precisely no consequences for this. Precisely no consequences. Manchester United fans, much as I would like to get on my high horse and tell them that they should boycott the next game, come off it. It's not going to happen. Not on anything like a scale that would make a dent in this man's self-regard. We are living in a country where racism is back in fashion. We are living in a country where people are sticking tatty flags on lampposts to tell their brown neighbours that they're not welcome here. And the media will pretend that it's something else. Because much of the media is racist. People like Dick Littlejohn and Rod Liddell have been writing columns for years that have essentially excused racism. They even, I never remember which one it is, spells it with a W to try and make it sound that people, as if people pointing out racism have got a speech impediment that renders their position somehow less powerful or less valid. It's everywhere. But it's not been fashionable for a while. It's been shameful for a while. And it's no longer shameful enough. 0345 6060973 is the number you need to tell me what it's like to be a... I hate to use the word victim because in some ways it emasculates you. But to be a victim of racism's return to fashion. What's it like? Especially if you'd allowed yourself to relax 10 years ago. You'd thought to yourself, this is so much better than it was for my mum. This is so much better than it was for my dad. This is so much better than it was for me in the 1970s or the 1980s. But it's not better anymore. It's 10:21.
LBC.
On a windswept walk in Carmarthen, while someone tries to use your card details to hire a speedboat in Cannes, this is the moment that you relax, knowing that Barclays Advanced Tech has helped to spot the fraud in under a second, and their expert team are on hand to close it down. So you can get back to being windswept. Oh, just one of the ways we're protecting our customers 24/7. Search Barclays Fraud Protection. Barclays. Make money work for you.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
You're actually quite funny. Sorry, not quite funny. Very funny. I'm surprised at how much I just laugh. Not that I'm surprised that you're funny.
When words fail, there's our number one Valentine's dine-in for £25, with options including succulent scallops and king prawns with roasted garlic butter, tender sirloin with triple-cooked fries, and creamy ruby and raspberry mousse, all from our number one range, plus a crisp bottle of Prosecco. Waitrose, the home of food lovers.
Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Offer ends 15th of Feb. Please drink responsibly. Non-alcoholic drinks also available.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself. And your phone. To stretch out. Sit back. And when you hear all change, please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
24 minutes after 10. I never know where those introductions are going, but this one went to a place where it became clear that racism is back in fashion. I hope that's not an inappropriate choice of words. If it is, it's nowhere near as inappropriate as Sir Jim Ratcliffe, who has commented upon the colonisation of Britain, got his statistics regarding immigration completely wrong, and concluded from the benefit of his tax-avoidant, friendly residence in Monaco that immigrants are costing the country too much money. Well, there's, of course, one way you could help rectify that situation, Sir Jim. What's it like, though, to be not me when this conversation is conducted, but to be one of the people that Jim Ratcliffe is talking about? Because he's not talking about immigrants. He can't tell. You line up 10 people in a room, he can't tell you which ones are the immigrants. So who's he going to identify as the ones that he's actually referring to? And it will be the brown ones. A bit like Donald Trump with South African asylum seekers. They don't mean white people, or at least they don't mean most white people. We had that. And he was pro-Brexit. We had that curious period where Eastern Europeans and Polish people were on the thick end of racism, on the ugly end of racism. And people like Jim Ratcliffe encouraged you to vote for Brexit as a consequence largely of that form of racism. And that didn't work. So now they've moved back to the more traditional territory of non-white people, which is what he's talking about when he uses the word colonisation, lest there be any doubt whatsoever. Rebecca is in Harrow. Rebecca, what would you like to say?
Hello, good morning. You asked in your introduction earlier on what it's like. And what it's like is I'm quite fearful at the moment. And I don't know how to express myself, but just to say it's actually really taken me back to my childhood where I lived where the BNP would walk past my dad's business. So I beg your pardon, apologise.
No, don't worry. Did we dump that or not? So we did. So you said I don't know how to police this, but we have to be very conscious of Ofcom. So for people wondering what just happened to their radio.
Ofcom, it just came out because...
No, I don't want you to feel bad. I don't want you to feel bad. It was shouted at you when you were a child, and the idea that you can't say it on the radio is in some ways ridiculous, but the rules are the rules.
Yeah,
so for people confused... No, stop apologising. I don't want you to apologise because you didn't do anything wrong, except according to broadcast regulations, which we are quite happy and keen to observe, but for the avoidance of doubt, people shouted the P word at you when you were little.
P word, and me asking my dad, why am I being called that when I'm not? And him having to explain, and I could never get my head around it. But anyway, what does it feel like? Like we're regressing.
What did your dad say?
Ignore them.
Right.
Ignore them. They don't know what they're talking about.
Had he met Jim Ratcliffe?
he's actually a Man United supporter. That's even worse.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of that going on today, won't there?
An awful lot of that. And he used to go in the 50s and 60s, you know, to go and see them play. So, you know...
Well, I'm glad I made you laugh. Tell me about regression. Comments like this, the Frank Hester donation to the Tory party, his comments about Diane Abbott, the promotion of Nigel Farage in all sorts of corners of the country. Just I think the right word is fashionable, isn't it? It's hard to think of a better one.
I think regression in the sense that I thought there was positive moves, and it did feel like it, and it does feel like it, and I think majority are still... pretty decent, you know?
Yes, of course.
But the cherry picking, or, you know, and focusing on a small, very small number of people doing wrong and making it out to be the whole spectrum of people in this country who are not of, you know...
No, I know. I mean, it's as old as the hills. And it's, you know, we saw it in 1930s Germany. You find, I mean, I don't think they even bothered finding...
Very it really does take it back to then, I guess, and Crystal Garden Night and all of that. You know, it very is reminiscent of what we learnt at school.
Is there a pivot point? Last question. If I forced you to... If we were drawing a graph and it was slowly climbing, and then it climbed quite quickly, I would say, probably in the first decade of this country, of this century, sort of, it was moving pretty fast, and you could tell that the people who were complaining about political correctness really felt as if they were on the backest of back foots. Is there a point at which the tide began to turn, a point at which this graph peaked and began to fall again?
Fall again towards what?
Towards racism. So things were getting better, and then now they're getting worse. When do we think that peak was reached?
I think one could ask, is there a strong correlation between increase in racism and social media access and inverted commas freedom of speech?
I think
one looks into that, and then you have prominent figures like, you know, the president of the free world, supposed free world, and then richest people like the South African pretending to be American, Elon Musk, and all the others like him.
Just sticking it on a much bigger canvas than it had been on for years, and of course, rewarding people for contributing their own bile to the bigger picture. Yeah, I think you're probably right. And that's very much the role that the flags play, of course. It allows people to move off social media and to bring their intimidation and bigotries onto the streets of this country. Well, of course, pretending otherwise and being joined by allies in the media and politics to pretend with them. It's bound to be part of the problem, isn't it? Part of the issue. 10:30 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. We're looking at the way that Sir Jim Ratcliffe is the latest public figure to confirm that racism is back in fashion in this country, and that publicly being racist carries very little consequence or punishment. And we are wondering what it's like to be a victim of that, as opposed to, in my case, a concerned bystander. Or, I suppose, in Sir Jim Ratcliffe's case, an enthusiastic promoter. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Pressure is building on one of the UK's richest men to apologise for saying the country is being colonised by immigrants. Manchester United's co-owner Sir Jim Ratcliffe made the comment in an interview. A 13-year-old boy has been charged with attempted murder after two boys were stabbed at a school in northwest London on Tuesday. The teenager, who can't be named, is due to appear before magistrates today. And the waiting list for routine hospital treatment in England has fallen for the second month in a row. Just under 7.3 million treatments were waiting to be carried out at the end of December. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with rain moving northwards. Scotland and northern England will see some patchy rain and hill snow, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
A southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
At Lidl, we value getting everyone round the table this pancake day. Make sure to top up on toppings from the fresh produce retailer of the year, us. Such as a 4-pack of lemons and fun-sized apples. Both for just 69p with Lidl Plus. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only. Offer ends 18th the 2nd, 26.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensified Pasta Sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato.
Whoa!
And spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify. Pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late. is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix.
We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions. To delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house.
And people who don't stack the dishwasher properly.
To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
It is 10:34. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Yesterday's phone-in was relevant to this one, although it may not have immediately felt that way, because the generosity of spirit that some of my correspondents extended to Andrew Windsor over his association with a paedophile, long and enthusiastic association with a convicted paedophile, and, of course, the allegations he faced from Virginia Giuffre, people very quick to defend him are exactly the same people who claim to be deeply concerned about grooming gangs where the culprits are more likely to be brown than white. That's racism. Sir Jim Ratcliffe claiming that the country has been colonised by immigrants who are costing too much money and proceeding to share statistics that are among the wrongest statistics in wrongland is racism. But the British media has, for reasons I don't fully grasp, become a place in the last few years where this won't be described factually as disgusting. It will be debated as something that's possibly salient, or we'll have a conversation about whether he should apologise or whether he has a point, when he clearly doesn't. He appeals to racists. If you like what he said, you are racist. Nobody can argue that what he means is there are too many faces on our streets that are not white. Although his streets, of course, are in Monaco, where approximately a quarter of the population is native and three quarters is, like him, immigrant. Hypocrisy, stupidity and racism are very, very hard to separate, aren't they? Can you have one without the other two? I don't know. Boyowa is in Croydon. Boyowa, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. Thank you so much for taking my call. I've phoned you many times before, but I'm really nervous and my heart is pounding. So forgive me if I kind of
Take your time.
Go off track a bit.
I'll try and be quiet for once.
there's a number of things here. I mean, I would echo your previous caller's what she talked about in regression. I'm in my late 50s, so I grew up. So I'm 58. So I grew up in the 70s, 70s and 80s, and I grew up in a part of London, southeast London to be precise, Plumstead, Woolwich, Abbeywood, all Thamesmead, that area, which was a stone's throw away from Sidcup, which used to be the National Front headquarters. So we would sometimes get on a bus, 96 bus, go into Bexley Heath. Now, Bexley Heath, Blacksand, Sidcup, those areas, you, as a black person or even a brown person in the 70s and 80s, you do not go to those areas on your own. The same with Eltham. I drive past the bus stop where Stephen Lawrence was killed on a daily basis. And to this day, because I used to catch buses from there, I think it was a 122 I used to catch, and I still drive past that bus stop, and my heart races.
Yeah.
And he was murdered 40 odd years ago. Now we talk about regression. We are now in a place now where I'm 58, and people like me that can afford to actually leave this country are now thinking that, because my wife I don't really watch the news during the day or anything. I don't listen. I try and stay away from it. The only time I go on the news, I go on YouTube and I watch you and Simon Marks talking about Trump and all that, and I love it. You know, sometimes I could spend a whole weekend going back and forth. But the fact of the matter is here, James, is What I don't think what a lot of people don't understand is actually what everyone, you know, I used to, people used to say to me when I was, you know, a young kid, I'll go back to Africa. and all of that. You know, go back to where you come from and, you know, and all of that. And do you know what? Actually, we can. And we actually want to now, because it's becoming so... Racism in this country is becoming so prevalent. And I don't know whether it's, you know, whether it's the, you know, the Trump effect and his, you know, and his fascist rhetoric. I don't know that. But it feels like now the media, and whether or not, you know, and you've said it many times that the media is, you know, is racist. I don't know enough to, you know, to say that. But I can tell you now that a lot of black people and a lot of brown people are tired.
I know.
We're tired of it. You know, we grew up with it when we were young. You know, and I felt through my 20s and 30s, I felt included. You know, I'm black, I'm British, I'm proud, but I'm also proud of my, you know, my heritage as well. And it feels like you can't be black and British, but you're also African. And it's like, well, you can actually. Do I support the England football team when they're playing football? Of course I do. How many black people play, you know, play for England?
More people look like you. More people who look like you in that team than look like me.
Absolutely.
Usually, often.
How many people built...
Same in Manchester United, actually.
Sir Jim Ratcliffe's business empire. How many immigrants were there that, you know, that helped him build his billion so that he can go and sit in his mansion in Monaco with his 17 billion and sit on his soapbox and then talk about colonisation? Disgraceful. He's an absolute disgrace. He's not going to apologise, like you said. And even if he did, it would come from, and you know, no one would believe it. But what he said about colonisation, somebody needs to give him a history lesson, because you cannot have Great Britain and colonisation in the same sentence and not talk about slavery for 400 years. You idiot. Absolute idiot.
Do you know, I've got nothing. That was absolutely incredible. I'm so glad you were listening today and not just waiting for this to appear on YouTube, because that was so powerful. I mean, can I ask you a strange question?
Yes.
If I say to you, please don't leave, how do you respond to that? Is that me not fully grasping what it's like to be you? Is that me sounding naive and a little bit idealistic, or is it...
Look. You know, look, racism is not going to... No one's going to come and, you know, call me the N-word on the street. No one's going to do... They'd be a fool to do that anyway, because that's not going to end well. But that's not going to... You know, that effect is not going to happen. But here is the bigger picture. I became a grandfather 4 months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you for that. And, you know, and I feel blessed for that. I look at my son, I look at my granddaughter, and I get into a flood of tears because I feel absolutely blessed for that. But you know what he said to me a couple of weeks ago? He's like, Dad, I can't stay here. I can't stay in this country. And wow. I said to him, yeah, I don't blame you, son. Do you know what? If I were you, yeah, I would make, you know, inroads to leaving. You know, when that is, but I...
In pursuit of a better life.
Absolutely.
How ironic.
Absolutely. All that, you know, so it's gone full circle, and my son's like saying to me, no, I can't stay here, Dad. I can't stay here. Can't.
And it's not, I mean, it's not the existence of the bigotry, because that is omnipresent. It's the social acceptance of it. It's the fact that you can't turn your television on without seeing Nigel Farage spewing his latest bile. It's the fact that Jim Ratcliffe will suffer no consequences.
Yep.
It's the fact that a man can talk about wanting to shoot Diane Abbott and hating all black women and suffer absolutely no sanction whatsoever. He hasn't even had his money sent back by Kemi Badenoch's Conservative Party. It's the fact that people can rant and rave about a crime committed by somebody who is your colour or brown-skinned, but when an identical crime is committed by somebody who is my colour, they are either silent or on mute. It's extraordinary, and it's the normalisation of the bigotry that is, I think, driving the position that you and your son hold. It's not the bigotry itself.
No, it's just become, for me now, James, and as you said, it's every day now.
Yeah.
Every day. Immigrants, 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 immigrants. You're not talking about immigrants because you can't identify what you mean by immigrants. This country is built on immigration. Most countries are built on immigration. But you can't, that's not what you're talking, you're not talking about immigrants. You're talking about black people and brown people. People that you do not like. People that, you don't have any black or brown people in your friendship. You don't, people like me do not know, I'm not in your friendship. You don't know black people. But you I'm sure you know black people in your workspace, in your warehouse. I'm sure there's immigrants in your work, in your warehouse or cleaning your flipping mansion.
And running your business for you as well.
I mean, you do.
I disagree with you on just one thing, and I'm very loath to disagree with you on this because your contribution has been so perfect. But actually, that you know that theory I've got, the thing I don't mean you theory. You've kind of, because my mate Wayne in Basildon, who rings into the programme quite a lot and who is a pal of mine outside of work, he's got really racist friends. We talk about it quite a lot. Wayne is mixed race.
And
we talk about it quite a lot. They don't mean him. So I sit on, even on Facebook, we see stuff and Wayne will be like, mate, I'm brown. and his friends go, not you, mate.
I know. I've had conversations like that where,
I'm sure.
where they've said to me, oh no, we don't mean you.
Yeah.
We don't mean you. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't mean? You're talking about black people. I'm black, in case you forgot. I'm black, mate. What, I don't understand what
you're
talking about.
I'll tell you what you're not. You're not very nervous, despite what you said at the beginning of this.
No, I turned on the radio and I knew that you would be talking about this, because even just this morning I was just looking in it and looking in, you know, into Jim Ratcliffe and how he's built his business and so on and so forth. And I see his stuff in Tesco's, and I'm like, no, it's just, you know, you are a prime example of what it is to be white and have that privilege of being able to do what you want to do, build your business without any difficulties or brick walls in front of you. Like, you know, I've built a business I've had a business for 15 years. And do you know what? It's only in the last year or so that I've actually come to the forefront of the business to actually feel that actually it's a business that's part owned by a black person. I've never been comfortable with that, James. And what does that tell you?
Yeah.
I've never been comfortable with that. Putting my face at the forefront, because I've always felt, oh, if people go on the website or whatever, they see a black face, they're not going to... And actually, it was on the website until a few weeks ago, and I asked them to take my face off the website.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And I've been in this country, and I'm born and bred in this country 58 flipping years, and I still feel that way. I mean, it's just I don't know. Maybe that's me.
It's not you. I can read you the messages that are coming in full support of you, and so there's a lot of empathy, but there's also a lot of reflection. A lot of people describing their experiences as having been identical to yours. It's the moving away that will stop a lot of people in their tracks. The idea that you would go somewhere else in pursuit of a better life, a better society.
That's going to happen.
Not an economic migrant, but a, what word can we use? But a compassion migrant, a decency migrant, leaving the country not in pursuit of tax breaks like Sir Jim Ratcliffe, but in pursuit of kindness, decency, and equity. Wow! Yeah, look at what they've done to us all. That's why you can't go. You can't let them win, mate.
I know, James, but look, the point's a bit late for me, but I know my son and his partner are going to
unless something changes fast, and there's not a lot of evidence or optimism that it's going to, not fast enough for Boyo's boy. Wow, what a call. I got nothing to add.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The deputy leader of the Labour Party, someone whom Keir Starmer actually sacked a few months ago. Lucy Powell is with me live in the studio taking your calls. Lizzie, who's a new caller in Sheffield.
Do you agree with your Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, that our student loan system is fair and reasonable?
I don't want to make sort of policy announcements.
We understand. You're not the Chancellor yet.
I do feel that is particularly egregious in that plan too, compared with some of the other so-called plans or the different schemes.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
You look really nice tonight.
Not that you don't look nice normally. It's just that I can tell you've made an effort. Not that you look scruffy the rest of the time.
When words fail, there's our number one Valentine's dine-in for £25. With options including succulent scallops and king prawns with roasted garlic butter, tender sirloin with triple-cooked fries, and creamy ruby and raspberry mousse, all from our number one range. Plus a crisp bottle of Prosecco. Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines and stores, subject to availability. Offer ends 15th of Feb. Please drink responsibly. Non-alcoholic drinks also available.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Stuck waiting again?
Tell me about it. I've spent all morning trying to get through to my GP.
Oh, I ditched that stress and joined Benenden Health. They've got 24/7 GP helpline. No waiting rooms, no sitting around.
Really? Sounds like a great service, unlike this one.
Press play on your health with the 24/7 GP helpline and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Thinking of buying a new electric car? It can be tough to know where to start. Luckily, the experts have done the work for you. The new Smart Hashtag 5 has just been announced as What Car's best family electric SUV of the year. And did we mention that the Smart Hashtag 1 and Hashtag 3 are also previous What Car Award winners? Work smart, not hard. Test drive Smart's award-winning EV range at smart.com.
At Lidl, get a Valentine's menu worth falling for. With a mouth-watering starter, main, side and dessert from our deluxe range. And top it off with a crisp bottle of Prosecco. All from only £12.95 for two. So go on, dish up a little romance this year. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only, B drink aware.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker, just say, play LBC.
It is 10:51. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And as Sir Jim Ratcliffe proves today, who knighted him? Do we know who knighted him? Any surprises there, do you think? It might be worth finding out. You can be as racist as you want in this country these days and not suffer any consequences at all. As opposed to the days not long ago that the brilliant comic Stuart Lee, currently in residence at Alexandra Palace, often reflects upon, where you can't say you're English in this country anymore without getting arrested. Phone-ins. Interesting, isn't it? I mean, they tend not to phone me anymore, sadly. I get the odd text, of course, from people who are racist, but who are still in some ways insisting that they're not. Today they are accusing me of living in a gated community in Chiswick. I live neither in a gated community nor in Chiswick anymore, but that's the point about being a racist. It turns you immediately into a liar. And also, what's wrong with gated communities? Is the idea that there won't be any people of colour in them? Or just the poor people that you're keen to avoid? Or just the poorer people of colour? I don't even know what the accusation there is supposed to contain, but it's not true. But that doesn't matter, because if you're a racist, you're a liar. If you're a racist, you're a hypocrite, which is how you can make racist comments about immigrants while being an immigrant. And you can say stupid things about colonisation while living in a principality where approximately a quarter of the population is native and three quarters are, like you, immigrants. Jim Ratcliffe. Speaking of whom, a message from Old Trafford. Thank you for this, James. I, a white Man United fan, live happily with many brown and black neighbours. Jim Ratcliffe is an utter disgrace and yet another questionable knight of the realm. This man does not speak for us. Al's in Sheffield. Al, what made you pick up the phone?
Good morning, James. I am in Sheffield, but I'm just working up here at the moment. I'm originally a lad from Willingham, not far from you.
I could have taken an educated guess. I might have gone for Wolverhampton at a push, but near enough, eh?
Yes, near enough, not too far away. Really nervous, James, but thank you for taking my call.
It's good to have you.
I'm about a week younger than you, 54 years of age, grew up at Willingham, quite a little small backward market town. Throughout my early age, all I can remember is a racism which was levelled at not just me, but the couple of few Indian lads who were at school and a couple of white lads. It was absolutely atrocious growing up in the 80s and early 90s. the words which were used against us were absolutely abysmal. What we tended to find then, James, is that black, Asian lads started sticking together. We started seeing the death of Clinton McCorbyn, remember that, in Wolverhampton?
Yes.
Stephen Lawrence, some absolutely abysmal crimes, Broadwater Farm riots, Tottenham riots, the Handsworth riots. A lot of them were racist-based, as far as I remember. Now, we started fighting back against it, black lads and Asian lads, and then what you found was the late 90s, early 2000s, everything started coming together. Black, white, green, blue, it didn't matter where you came from. We were all one. And it was like that. It was absolutely brilliant, James. Started working clubs, saw how racism started being, not eradicated, started becoming more underground, if I remember right, James.
Yes, you do remember.
The words were not used to your face, a P word or the N word wasn't used to your face. Everybody started gelling together. I think this was a rise of clubs and pubs.
I didn't want to cheapen the beauty of your rhetoric by mentioning ecstasy. But,
ecstasy? Then that is what happened. I was working in Birmingham. Many dance clubs, which you probably visited, like Money Pennies.
Oh, right? Boy.
Yeah, Money Pennies. We used to work at a club in Kidderminster called Redwoods, too. Yeah, we've probably got a lot to talk about, James, but that's another story for a different day.
Indeed it is. And also, you know, don't do drugs, kids. Let me make that clear.
Yeah, so we saw how life changed. We've lads all coming together and different races coming together in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it started getting really, really good. Off the back end of that, James, we saw how it was getting really nice now. Okay. It's disgusting how it's turned full circle, as we say. I'm a 54-year-old male. I've got my daughter's half English, half Asian. She's 13 years of age. She comes back from school now really, really worried. Oh. But what kicked it off for me, James, was about 3 years ago, my sister, I'm Pakistani Muslim.
Yeah.
My sister's Pakistani Muslim. She got married to my brother-in-law's half Polish, half English. I won't mention our name, so don't worry. His dad was... He ended up in the gulag. His dad ended up in the gulag in the Second World War. Basically marched across, all the way across, I think it was Mongolia, into Iran. And then caught a ferry, him and his brother did, once they got released out of the gulags, caught a ferry to England and joined the Polish Army Resistance. They fought against fascism and racism. And my brother-in-law's father is one of the very first people to go up Monte Cassino. Wow. He was a very, very young lad.
Damn.
He was carrying ammo up and down the mountain to fight for everybody. Fight for everybody. And he saw a lot. He didn't say much. His dad didn't. And he came back. Well, my sister married this lad. Now, my parents being Asian, went, no. I was one of the very first people to say, look, Dad, Mom, he's a good, lovely lad. We live in England now. We need to embrace this. And Mom and Dad accepted my brother-in-law for who he was. Well, about 3 years ago, we noticed that my brother-in-law was going down the Farage route.
Oh, no.
And we're sitting in his kitchen. Now, we're a multicultural family. We've got nephews of doctors, lawyers, police officers. We're a typical Asian family. We're all professional people, right? So all my family were there. And my brother-in-law was sitting there, and he started on about Mr. Farage, and he was going, and I said, look, as far as you get a good instinct about people, James. Mm. 3 years ago, I knew Farage was an out-and-out racist. My gut instinct said to him, you're a racist, mate. You don't come anywhere on my Richter scale. I'll stay away from people like you.
Mm.
My brother-in-law sat there going, where's your proof? Where's your proof? And I sat there, look, you don't have to have proof, as in a court of law proof, you've got to go by your own gut instinct. And I've grown up with racism. Well, I know what racism is and what the colour of racism is. And I said that to my brother-in-law. We end up having a massive row.
I'm sorry.
My sister stood there. My little daughter was there too. She was 9 years of age. She's looked at me. The closest people to her are all rowing about Nigel Farage. At that, my brother-in-law's gone, where's your proof? Where's your proof? And I've just gone, right, got my daughter and walked out. That was 3 years ago. That was the last time I saw my sister and my brother-in-law.
Oh, man.
And we fought against these bloody idiots all this time. Now, my daughter, over the last 3 years, 4 years, as she's grown up, she's 14 now, James. Yeah. She's, please forgive me about my dates and everything. She's 13. She's only 13. My head's gone.
That's all right. I apologise to me. I'm hanging on your every syllable. Wow.
Right, and I've
not seen her cousins.
Not seen her cousins or anything. My daughter, over the last 3 or 4 years, has seen her rise of Farage, and now she's facing this same nonsense at school with people going, why don't you lot go back to where you come from? And she goes to quite a multicultural school, and it's like, wow. And now are we, us, as parents, have got to teach our kids to fight against this? And it's absolutely ridiculous what we have to teach our kids. A friend of mine, he showed me some quite right-wing fight clubs. You go out underground, James.
Yeah.
Right-wing fight clubs, which are neo-Nazi based. They're not just in Europe, but they're in the UK too. And it's like, wow, it's like getting ready for a battle, a war, which looks like it's coming. And now a lot of Asian and black lads, I speak to a lot of my mates all the time, James, and we are all scared. We're all grown men of 54 years of age. Yeah. We don't want our kids to go through this nonsense that we put up with for many years. And then what's going to happen to this country if the whole country starts battling against each other, black people pitched against white, pitched against anybody who's foreign.
I'll tell you, he won't be affected by it.
The rich and Mr. Farage.
And Mr. Ratcliffe.
In their mansions.
Mr.
Yeah.
Ratcliffe.
They'll be sitting in their mansions, and your last caller was brilliant. What a gentleman.
So are you.
Right. The fact that he turned around and said that he wants to get out of the country, well, what happens to working class lads like me and my family who can't? My brothers and sisters, they're all educated. I've got a good job, but I couldn't afford to get out of the country. And why the blooming hell should I? Because we've helped to build this blooming country off our backs.
It's your country, Al.
Right, I know it is, James, but why haven't we been taught a correct history of how the Commonwealth countries helped the UK in the Second World War to fight fascism, to fight racism, to say we had X amount of soldiers come from African Commonwealth countries, from Jamaica, we had X amount of people, we had a couple of million Muslim soldiers joined, a couple of million Sikh soldiers joined. These the deaths which had taken place during their wars, these are people who gave our lives for this country, the Queen and country, to come over and then to be treated like pants.
I hear you.
Sorry, mate.
Don't apologise to me for that kind of contribution. Are you all right?
I'm cool, James. All I'm right. Cool. It's just I'm 54-year-old grown now, and it's like, wow,
spring chicken.
We ain't spring chickens, mate. We're older than Santa's dog. We are, pal.
you look after yourself. All right.
And you too, James. Thank you.
And stay safe. All right.
I'll just say something to you, James, before you do go. Please keep doing what you do, James. You are one of our only voices out there, and I really, really, really mean that. Please don't ever apologise to us. What you'll tend to find is that black, Asian immigrants to this country, now that you are one of our only voices, one of our only people standing in our corner, beating that drum for us. So thank you.
Appreciate it, brother. It's a lovely thing to say, but it's patriotism. I love the same country that you love for the same reasons that you love it. 11:02 is the time. Thank you, Al.
On your radio, on the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Mayor of Greater Manchester has added to criticism of Sir Jim Ratcliffe's comments about immigration. Sir Jim, who's the co-owner of Manchester United, claimed the UK has been colonised by immigrants. Andy Burnham has called the remarks inaccurate, insulting and inflammatory. The Justice Minister, Jake Richards, has told LBC Sir Jim should apologise.
Many people come to this country far from trying to take over the country, but to contribute, working our NHS or in our social care system, for example. But it's perfectly legitimate to have concerns about immigration, and that's why this government is taking urgent action to get a grip of our borders and bring down levels of migration generally from the 1 million net migration figures that we had under the Conservatives. But his language was offensive, it was wrong, and he should apologise.
A 13-year-old boy has been charged with attempted murder over a double stabbing at a school in northwest London. The attack happened on Tuesday. LBC's Fraser Knight has more details.
Police say these are extremely serious charges against the young boy, and they say the 12 and 13-year-old who he's accused of trying to kill are still in hospital in a stable condition. The 13-year-old will appear in court later this morning.
The UK's economy grew by 0.1% in the final 3 months of 2025. Analysts say uncertainty in the lead-up to the budget added to pressure in the quarter. The waiting list for routine hospital treatment in England has fallen for the second month in a row. Just under 7.3 million treatments were waiting to be carried out at the end of December. The hospitality sector is urging the Chancellor to scrap plans to allow a holiday tax in England. Regional mayors will be given powers to introduce visitor levies on overnight stays. Industry bosses are warning the plans would hit families, put jobs at risk and drain money from local communities. And Thomas Tuchel has signed a new contract to stay on as England manager until the end of Euro 2028. His current deal was due to expire after the World Cup this summer. Tuchel has been linked with the managerial vacancies at Manchester United and Tottenham. In the City, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 20 at £10,492. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with rain moving northwards. Scotland and the north of England will see some patchy rain and hill snow, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 5 minutes after 11. Just some other detail that you may find interesting. Jim Ratcliffe is estimated to be worth about £17 billion, I think. Over the course of the last 4 years, his firms have received up to £70 million in state aid. The government a month ago was preparing a £50 million bailout for their plant in Grangemouth. He asked the government for help in October. Let me just drive this down again, because some people may not tell you this kind of thing while they're inviting you to comment on whether or not you agree with a racist. Chemical companies owned by the billionaire Jim Ratcliffe had already been granted as much as £70 million in UK state aid in the past 4 years before this week's, last month's £50 million government bailout for his Grangemouth plant in Scotland. He is complaining about how much immigrants cost the country, which is a statistically inept observation. It is not a factually correct claim. It has been debunked a billion times, but there's no point debunking it because people believe things about immigration that are so utterly detached from reality that it speaks to something different. It speaks to a psychological hatred of the other rather than a particular interest in statistics, facts or numbers. But he has been in receipt of over £100 million of taxpayers' money to prop up his businesses, which have made him the richest man in the country just a few years ago. And he is complaining that it's costing too much money to have immigrants. Go on, riddle me that. 120 million quid in taxpayers' money to prop up companies owned by a man who's worth £17 billion, and he's complaining that immigrants cost the country too much.
Give me a call and tell me whether you think he's got a point despite being wrong about everything.
Ah, but he's white, so it doesn't matter. Remember when Lewis Hamilton moved to Monaco for tax reasons? Awful lot of abuse he received. Wonder why the same levels of abuse aren't directed at Jim Ratcliffe. In fact, some of the people who'll be defending him today were probably the people that were... Well, you know they were. There's no probably about it. They were attacking Lewis Hamilton for being unpatriotic. Now, what's the most obvious difference between Lewis Hamilton and Jim Ratcliffe? Anyone? No, I can't. I mean, I can't put my finger on it. Put your hand down, Keith. What is the most obvious... Well, what could it possibly be that would explain why two people behaving identically would be treated so differently by the kind of character who would be keen to ring a radio programme to tell them why they think Jim Ratcliffe's got a point? What do you know in your gated community in Chiswick? They send two radio presenters who live in neither gated communities nor Chiswick, but even if they did, they'd still despise racism and indeed racists, like you, sending those texts, claiming you're not racist. Al's brother-in-law, victim of racism in the run-up to Brexit, Farage-driven bigotry, directed at Eastern Europeans, now coming round to join that side of our political discourse because, what, I don't know, too many brown people? Too many brown people in his own family? Prove that he's racist? All right, have a look at my YouTube interview with him from a few years ago. Even The Sun, which has done more to normalise and promote racism in this country over the last 50 years than almost anybody else. Or anywhere else. It's been better latterly, but only in response to where society had gone, not leading society, but simply following where decency had taken us. Even The Sun described Nigel Farage's comments on my programme as racist. If The Sun are doing it, then I think Al's brother-in-law probably has got all the proof he needs. He wouldn't want to live next door to you, mate. He said so. Albeit that you're Polish as opposed to Romanian. I don't want to live next door. Oh, speaking foreign on trains. You mean like my own children do at home to their German mother? Ooh, down with... Ooh, no. Ooh, dear, no. You know what I mean. Racism. Back in fashion. Jim Ratcliffe thinks that Nigel Farage is a, quote, intelligent man. Which is odd, really, because I think they're both racists. Rachel's in Palmer's Green. Rachel, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Can I just begin by saying that I really love your show, and I think that... You, even though I've never met you, you've been a friend. You really have, and a really bright, bright light in these bleak times. So thank you.
No, you absolutely can't say that, Rachel. I forbid it.
I just wanted to share bits of my life with you and the other listeners, really. My parents came here from the Caribbean, from Jamaica specifically, in 1955. Mm. And it was difficult. My dad was a black Jamaican and my mum was a white Jamaican. I say was because they've both passed away now. Okay. And it was very difficult for them. You know, I remember poo being popped through the letterbox and sanitary towels and all sorts of dreadful things coming through our letterbox. Good but God. My mum and dad ploughed on, James. They ploughed on and they were great, really. They taught me and my siblings how to be resilient, how to be strong, how to be proud, and how to remember that love rises above everything. We lived in a great house with lots of different people from Ireland, from Scotland, from all over the world, and it really was a kind of home of the world, really. Like my school classroom was filled with lots of children from all over the place. Greece, Turkey, parts of Asia, parts of Africa, Caribbean. We really did have the world in a classroom. Having said that, you know, things were difficult for Dad. He was regularly followed home by teddy boys wielding chains, bicycle chains, and he had to find different ways to get home most nights. He worked long 12-hour shifts and really struggled, but they kept going, James. They kept going. And during the 70s, I became involved in Rock Against Racism and the Anti-Nazi League. And even though it was a difficult time, there was a sense of hopefulness, optimism. Me and my friends of all shades, colours, backgrounds got together and we had a kind of common foe. And it was bigotry.
Yeah.
And it was hatred. And it was all those ugly things that we're dealing with now that are kind of bigger and more shocking than ever, perhaps. So for me, the 70s was a bit more hopeful.
Gosh.
And what I've seen in the last 10 years has just broken my heart. Like you, I love this country. I was born here, born in North London. And to see what's happened, and I think the likes of Farage have contributed, stoked a very, very ugly and dangerous fire. I think his words have sown division, bile, the most dreadful racist vitriol. And I think it's seeped down. It's seeped down. And I've noticed a difference, a kind of shift. even towards me, and I'm, you haven't seen me, I'm a tiny little thing, but I'm racially profiled in shops, which is awful, and I often have to show my receipt. I'm stopped at airports and patted down regularly, you know, pulled aside, and my husband, who happens to be a white guy, is like, what the hell's going on? Because it never happens to him. Yeah, James, I see the shift. I feel the shift, and it breaks my heart. It bloody breaks my heart because I love this place. I love this crazy, wonderful, beautiful place. And to see this happening to a country that I called home is tearing my heart apart.
I mean, it is home, isn't it? And yet, in your voice, there's a sense that it means it's a different word for you than it is for me now. It didn't used to be, I don't think, but it is today.
Yes.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Absolutely, James. And I just have one memory, or I have several actually, but my mum and dad, as I said, dad was black and mum was white. And I remember mum and I had gone away on holiday and dad came to meet us at the airport. And I can always remember he leaned forward to kiss her, but he was aware of being watched and all the watchful eyes around him, and he pulled back.
God.
And he wanted to kiss her, but it was the looks. It was the looks of people around that stopped him, James. And, you know, when you're frightened to love, when you're frightened to show love, it's scary, James. Well, because we're human beings. We're about love, essentially.
That was what, I mean, I know you know this, but some people won't. That's what started the Notting Hill riots, wasn't it? The race riots in Notting Hill were started by a relationship between protests against a relationship between a black man and a white woman.
Yes.
And, of course, the racists today still focus on Notting Hill and the carnival, which is a celebration of love, albeit one that is often subject to the kind of criminality you will almost always get at massive, massive gatherings of people like that. They still use it as a point of leverage for subtle, more subtle racism. It's getting less subtle every day at the moment, isn't it, Rachel?
Yes, absolutely. And it's the conversations. You know, I remember Dad sitting me down on the little wooden stool and saying to me, you know, it's a tough world out there, and sort of telling me almost about what it means to be black. And it felt really, really heavy. It felt like a heavy crown on my head. And I was like, wow. You know, that I'd have to work really hard at school, harder than my white girlfriends. I'd have to work really hard to make something of myself. And I was only 8 at the time, but I got a really bad school report, James. I got a B and a D.
No! I wish you'd told me that at the beginning. I'd have banned you from the programme. Absolutely outrageous. Thank you. I mean, as I say, I'm not on the receiving end of this. You know, I mean, I get a lot of abuse from racists, but it's not racism because I'm white. But I hope it's not inappropriate to say that my callers today are making me feel better than I did at the beginning of the phone, and even as they describe terrible things to me, because I think we're highlighting what we have in common, not what sets us apart. I hope so.
And they'll never stop me believing in love, James. They'll never stop me from loving, and they'll never stop me from forming bridges with other people who might not look exactly like me. I'm bigger than that, and I'm better than that, and they will never win.
There it is. Thank you, Rachel. It's 11:17. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Somewhat appropriately, it's day 4 of the Farage Files now. We're experimenting this week in what would happen if his outfit were treated to the same levels of scrutiny that most of the media deploys for all the other, well, for the Labour Party, most obviously. And it wasn't going to be a feature. It was just going to be one day on Monday when we had 4 stories. But then we did it again on Tuesday when we had 4 stories. And guess what? It happened again on Wednesday when we had 5 stories. That's 4 plus 4 plus 5, Keith. That's 13. And I think Henry Riley's got 4 more, which will be coming up at about 11:45 today. After that, I think we can all have a metaphorical bath, can't we? And get stuck into Mystery Hour.
This is LBC. Nothing beats that electric feeling of live sport. As the proud automotive partner of Team GB, Vauxhall is supporting Britain's extraordinary athletes through every nail-biting, glue-to-the-box moment. Vauxhall is working towards a better future for our nation with its electric vehicle range, including the compact Vauxhall Combo Electric Van, made in Britain for Britain. Head to lbc.co.uk and tell us about your own extraordinary work feats to win £1,000.
The Philly cheese stack is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions and even more cheese. The Philly cheese stack. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary. Subject to availability.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new. Tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la, 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 I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
19 minutes after 11 is the time. 20 minutes after 11, forgive me. And you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Sir Jim Ratcliffe's racism is under scrutiny, not under debate, because there's nothing to debate. He's an ignorant racist who has said ignorant racist things about immigration, despite being an immigrant, and about colonisation, despite living in a principality where the native-born population is outnumbered by incomers, immigrants, like Jim Ratcliffe, by about 3-1. And he's also been talking absolute gibberish about the cost to the economy of immigration, despite having trousered £120 million of public money in state aid for the support of his business, which has made him one of the richest men in the world, and relatively recently the richest man in this country. I mean, just knit all that together, and you understand how intoxicating racism can be. Because he stands really against all of the things that the national interest represents. Tax avoidance, racism, taking money from the state while being one of the richest men in it. Taking millions from the state while otherwise his factories would close. Can't use his own money to keep them open. He wants the government's money to keep them open. All of these things. But the crucial point, and again, we're back to the Epstein files, where Nigel Farage's very good friend Steve Bannon explained to his very close friend, the paedophile, that they were trying to fill Western democracies with far-right politicians because it's the fascists who will let them do what they want. You need to understand the relationship between fascism and wealth to understand how fascism can happen. We are going to rob you blind and you won't even notice because you'll be so busy celebrating the racism. You'll be so busy celebrating the deportation that you won't notice that you're getting poorer every day. You'll be so busy celebrating the racism that you won't notice that we are rinsing not just the country but the world. Bannon put it in writing that they wanted far-right politicians in the European Parliament because then they would be able to do whatever the hell they wanted with regards to cryptocurrency. There's an unhinged headline yesterday that I forgot to read out to you about how the industrial... Well, let's do it as an unhinged headline, shall we? Keith, are you awake? Should we do it? Can I remember exactly what the words were? I'll try.
Unhinged headline.
The Industrial Revolution would be illegal now, or words to that effect, in, you guessed it, the Daily Telegraph. Yeah, you're right, it would. You wouldn't be allowed to send children up chimneys now. You wouldn't be able to make people work 7 days a week, 364 days a year now. You wouldn't be able to fill factories with murderous machinery that routinely dismembered or killed the workforce. There's millions of things. You wouldn't be able to force children to work in match factories and inhale sulfur on an industrial scale. There's lots of things that went on in the 18th and 19th century that would be illegal now. And do you know who hates that? Apart from your man in the Daily Telegraph? Your oligarchs. How'd their workers have rights? How'd their workers have rights? And the fascism goes hand in hand with the oligarchy. You can't have one without the other. You need the support of the oligarchs to promote the fascism. And so whether or not they are all racist or whether or not they just see fascism as a business opportunity is moot. It doesn't really matter because they're happy to embrace the racism and, in Jim Ratcliffe's case, promote it and indeed to say warm words about Nigel Farage, just as many very rich men in America have said warm words about Donald Trump, even as his stormtroopers shoot American citizens dead in the street for the crime of being, what, honest, alive, brown, not even brown, white people being shot dead by Trump's goons now. And the fascists and the oligarchs profit from all of it. And the residents of Idiot's Corner, although I haven't got many today, but there's been a couple, think that they're somehow winning as they get poorer, as they lose social capital, actual capital, as their lives are diminished in every imaginable way and their hatred consumes them. They think they're winning because people like Jim Ratcliffe and Donald Trump tell them that they're winning. Because they hate foreigners too. And everybody gets poorer, except the people who started this, richer than all of us. Anyway, let's have a phone in about why Jim Ratcliffe's got a point, says every other presenter on the planet. Lee's in Stevenage. Lee, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. You're right.
I am. I don't know where that came from, Lee. Forgive me, actually, and interrupt me quick.
I'm only going to keep it brief as well, and I apologise. I'm not always the best at articulating what I want to say, but...
Go on.
I turned on the radio this morning, and sometimes I just have to switch things off, otherwise it ruins my day, you know, and I admire the fact that you managed to persevere and push through and keep talking about these issues, even though they're utterly ridiculous. Like, I feel like we live in a simulation sometimes, and I feel like we're just being tested with the most unfair, ridiculous scenarios, and like a bunch of ants just watching us run around on fire. It doesn't make sense to me. But so with the racism thing, I work a lot on building sites. I work in transport, but I'm 30 years old now. I agreed with your point earlier when you said that, you know, as a white British man, you see it all around, but you don't. I'm not a victim of racism. Sure. I'm fortunate enough not to have to deal with it. But because I'm a white man, and especially in the type of environments that I work in, if I'm standing in a yard and there's 10 white blokes standing around, they assume that because you're white, you don't mind the racism. You they will say the most disgusting things and expect you to be okay with it. And I used to argue, I used to say, mate, why the hell would you say something like that? It's ridiculous, you can't, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
And you'd get alienated. You'd be the only guy at the firm that no one talks to because you care too much. And it doesn't serve you. It doesn't help.
And listen, there'll be construction sites and at shop floors where this doesn't happen and where this isn't normal, but there are more.
Yeah, and it is. I think I've always worked in those kind of places. I used to work for Amnesty International for a couple of years.
Crikey.
And you'd never hear it there. You'd never hear it there.
No kidding.
No, of course. But, I mean, if you surround yourself in the right environment, you won't have to hear it.
But it sometimes only takes one or two people. And because of those 10, I wonder how many of them would be actually privately ashamed of what they're joining in with. It takes, this is why Farage is so effective, because he makes it seem okay. And there's an awful lot of people who really don't like it, but who are going to go along with it for an easy life. So you stand up to it, and then for an easy life, you stop standing up to it. Some people who are less decent than you, decent's a tough word, but that they will be joining in with the ringleaders, like all bullies. They will have facilitators who don't actually want to be bullies, but think that that's the path to an easier life.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't you think? Or do you think they're all rancid?
Well, it's a bit of a gross comparison. I used to be a vegan for a few years, and I would never preach to people. I never say you have to stop eating meat. You have to stop doing this. But sometimes you would get someone who gets off on challenging you.
Yeah.
And they'll say, you know what? I would actually go out and snap a neck myself of a chicken and eat it raw, sort of thing, just to get your back up.
Yeah.
And I would have to fight back. I would have to say, I would say, no, do you know why you're wrong? It's because of this, this, and this. And it's the same with
Utterly
racist. But like I said, I would shut off the radio, or I'd walk away. I'd turn around and just bash my head against the door or something just to escape. But then I'd go home, and you can't escape it. My dad is one of the most racist people I've ever met as well. And he's the P word for him is not a racist word. That's actually the word. That's what he thinks the word is, you know?
Wow.
And you can't escape it, and you try.
Well,
and
you did. So why are you not? Why did this apple fall so far from the tree, Lee?
I don't know. When I was young, my first best friend who lived next door to me, he was Kenyan.
Yeah.
And I basically lived at his house. His mum made me go to church with him, and it was so normal from the get go that when racism became apparent to me, I guess it just never landed. It never made sense.
Because it's ridiculous. That's the point, isn't it? It's the ridiculousness of it that people like you and I have the luxury of examining because
it
we're
makes
not.
I feel so bad for everyone that has to deal with it.
Yeah.
And there's nothing I can do. It just feels like it's hopeless and.
And that the traffic is unstoppable. It isn't, of course. It never is. But it's always a question of how bad things get before they start getting better again. Everybody knows what Farage is. It's just a question of whether or not you're prepared to admit that you like it, and more people are. Nadeem Zahawi just come out in defence of Jim Ratcliffe. That would be Nadeem Zahawi, the refugee, from a refugee family. How does he think that the men that hate refugees are talking about and not talking about him? Oh, hang on, I'm rich. You know how rich I am because I got into so much trouble with the Inland Revenue and lied about it and left politics in many ways in disgrace. What possible way back to politics could there be for a disgraced former refugee or a disgraced refugee who lied about the Inland Revenue? Oh, well, here's Nigel Farage with a lovely little platform for you. In answer to the question of what the difference is that I was asking you earlier between Lewis Hamilton, who has been abused vilely over his decision to move to Monaco to avoid tax, and Jim Ratcliffe, who has also moved to Monaco to avoid tax, but not been abused vilely for it. I've got one wrong answer. Would you like to hear it? Easy, James. Lewis is a racer, and Jim Ratcliffe is a racist. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
The Mayor of Greater Manchester has added to criticism of Sir Jim Ratcliffe's comments about immigration. Sir Jim, who's the co-owner of Manchester United, claimed that the UK is being colonised by immigrants. A 13-year-old boy is due to appear before magistrates charged with attempted murder. He's accused of stabbing two boys aged 12 and 13 at a school in northwest London on Tuesday. And Thomas Tuchel has signed a new contract to stay on as England manager until the end of Euro 2028. His current deal was due to expire after the World Cup this summer. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with rain moving northwards. Scotland and northern England will see some patchy rain and hill snow, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
The customer service was really good.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
On your marks, get set, go hybrid. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. More oomph than a Friday feeling. And smoother than your last online date. More confidence, more go. In a new hybrid engine with 0% APR representative over 24 months. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. Go on. Visit your local Toyota centre. Price from £21,595. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 31st March 2026. Optional final payment and indemnities may be required. See website conditions apply.
At Lidl, we value getting everyone round the table this pancake day. Make sure to top up on toppings from the fresh produce retailer of the year. Us. Such as a four-pack of lemons and fun-sized apples. Both for just 69p with Lidl Plus. Lidl. More to value. Subject to availability. Selected stores. GB only. Offer ends 18th of 2nd, 26.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
11:34 is the time. Who goes Nazi? Eh? It's an article I think of every single day at the moment, and I used to think about it fairly regularly anyway. But the extraordinary examination by the historian Dorothy Thompson, writing in Harper's Magazine in the United States of America almost 100 years ago now, of looking around a room full of people and knowing which ones would go Nazi, given the opportunity, including an awful lot of people who would, in their own hearts, believe it was absolutely impossible that they ever would. Who goes Nazi? And you get an indication of the answer to that question when you look at comments like Jim Ratcliffe's about colonisation by immigrants of this country, despite being an immigrant in a country where the native-born population is outnumbered by immigrants by about 3-1. Spoiler alert, that's not the UK, where net migration has halved in the last 2 years. How many people even know that, do you think? And, because I sometimes worry that you think I exaggerate, when I tell you that most of the media will turn this into a debate and will both sides it, which is effectively saying, is racism okay? Are you a bit racist? Call me now on 0345 606. Okay, we'll vote. So the Sun has a poll. Was Man United owner right to say UK has been colonised by immigrants? Vote now. They probably even charge you for the, well, I think those days are behind us now, but the Express used to have a very tidy little sideline in getting people to ring in and reveal that they were racist by answering a question like that one and getting charged 50p for the privilege. Because they're laughing at you, the promoters of racism. They're laughing at you while they fill their own pockets and you're too busy to get cross because you're screaming at the television there's too many brown people in the advert. It's, I mean, exhausting for a white person whose job is simply to point it out and condemn it. But anyway, here we are. I make a list, whether we know it or not yet, of who's going to come out. So everyone on Farage's team has to come out and back this, whether they agree with it or not. Spoiler alert, they probably agree with it. Suella Braverman is going to have to come out with this, even though it will mean that her own children experience similar horrors to what the children of our callers have described happening at schools again. First time round in the 1970s, this time round in the 2020s. You make a list of who's going to back this. Liz Truss, do you think she'll come out in support or against? These lies, they are lies. And at the very least you could say is that he is profoundly wrong, measurably, statistically wrong. And you move into the realms of opinion, you have morally wrong, obviously wrong. So how on earth can you have a conversation predicated on the possibility that he might be right when his numbers are wrong, his words are wrong, his statistics are wrong, and his comments are wrong? Everything he said is wrong, measurably and demonstrably wrong. But give me a ring and tell me why you agree with him. That is incredible, right? We track these moments together every day. That's incredible. It's not a new low. It's the same as the old low. But it's still incredible to think that you live in a civilized society where the media, the mass media, will today be taking comments that are demonstrably and utterly wrong, measurably wrong, statistically wrong, syntactically wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. But give me a ring and tell me why you think he's right.
Well, the broad consensus is that he's right.
The broad consensus that the earth is flat does not mean that the earth is flat. The broad consensus that all the other planets revolve and orbit around Earth, if everybody believes that it's true, it doesn't become true. Jim Ratcliffe is wrong. In every meaningful way, he is wrong. The word colonised does not mean what he has used it to mean. The numbers that he deploys to describe the population are false. The claim that immigration is costing us money is false. But we're going to have a phone in about why he's right. Or we're going to have a vote on our newspaper website about why he's right. And you cannot exaggerate how broken and corrupt that is. And it's normal. That's Brexit Britain. Farah is in Southfields. Farah, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I'm going to start off with a little bit of experience of racism, but I am going to say something positive at the end.
Okay. Oh, wow. Well, this is amazing. You're producing your own call. It'll never catch on. Go on.
So my father moved over from Pakistan in 1952. He actually came over here to play cricket.
Wow.
So you can't really get any more English than that. He played county cricket as well. He fell in love with an English girl. They were married for 13 years. But the racism and isolation that actually they experienced broke their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
She actually didn't want to have children because she said she couldn't face her own children experiencing what they were going through. So it was a very long marriage. And my father really wanted children. So it was a number of things that broke that marriage. And I won't, I'm being honest. I wouldn't be talking to you if he hadn't married my mum.
Yeah.
So they got married in the 70s. I remember my first experience of racism. It didn't actually happen to me. It was my first day in primary school, and we were all sitting on the carpet, and the teacher asked where, all our families were from. And when it came to a girl who then became a really good friend, she said, oh, well, I'm from Palestine. And the teacher just said, there's no such place. And I just was sitting there thinking, what? I don't understand, because I was like four or five. So I didn't really get it. She teacher picked on the wrong family, the mother, and actually a Jewish mum also came in and ripped shreds off her the next day. And then sort of in terms of racism that sort of I've experienced, it really sort of only landed when, I was just going to say, my mum actually has a fine arts degree, and that was the first time I kind of heard racism against my parents, because she applied for a job at a very famous museum to do sort of restoration work on portraits, which she was very talented about. And when it got to, you've got an accent, where are you from? What's your ethnic origin? And she said where she was from.
Yeah.
Suddenly, the application to the lady just said, we're not taking any more applications. So Dad actually moved us from sort of Ealing to where they live now, which is, Southfields, very leafy white suburban area. And when we moved in, we were the only sort of non-white family on the road. We had neighbours. One of them actually put a note in the newsagent window saying, illegal aliens have moved into, and then gave our actual house number and address.
What year was this?
This was 1982.
Good God.
1982, because we just literally moved in. We had dog poo left on our doorstep. When the Satanic Verses came out, it was put in the front window of one of my neighbours. I think somebody actually broke the window, it wasn't us. So there was that. And then sort of my experience of racism was really weird. It was when I graduated and started working, in my first job. And I was in sales, and I was dealing with somebody who was a complete, known misogynist. But for some reason, he liked speaking to me. And I managed to sort of close a deal that nobody else could do. But when I wanted to go down and have the contract signed in person, this was before email, my boss stopped me. And I thought it was just because I was a girl or, that kind of thing. And he said, finally got really frustrated, and he said, no, it's because you sound white on the phone.
Oh.
Going to waiting in receptions for client meetings, people would look past me. So that was really hard. Now my children are facing it.
Well, just
go on.
When did it get better? I don't know whether I'm being unduly obsessed with this graph that I've imagined in my mind. Things were getting better until, but then things got better for you as well. That would not happen in Southfields today, obviously.
No, it wouldn't. And we've got a very multicultural street now, who love having street parties. It got better from about 98 till 9/11.
Okay. Wow.
And then it really kicked off again. Oh, yeah. I mean, it. You know, we were, to a certain degree, in a nice sort of way, we were kind of invisible. It didn't matter if you're Muslim or Asian or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it just didn't matter. In fact, people were more curious because they were my generation growing up in their 20s and 30s. They weren't, you know, the older, what I call the blue rinse, Daily Mail blue rinse brigade. And now my children are facing it. And that's partly the reason why I called in, because my daughter just turned around to me a few weeks ago and just said, "Mum, when reform gets in, where are we going to live?"
Blimey.
And that's because, you know, they're 16 now, they're twins, and, you know, over the last couple of years, they've really experienced a lot of racism since October 7th, actually, in particular.
Yeah.
They're mixed race, so they don't look like me, and I've spoken to you before, and I'm thankful for that, for their own safety. And one of my daughters was on the bus, and a guy turned around to her and just said, "Are you an Arab?" And she said, "No, I'm a schoolgirl." She was in her school uniform. She's quite feisty. And then she turned around and she goes, "And my dark curly hair from my white Irish father." But her, you know, her older sister by 1 minute had some really obscene racism shouted at her in the streets. And she was actually kneeling at the time, which is obviously there's a big Asian population. So, you know, there is this, and it just, I was asked a couple of weeks
ago. It's back, Farah. I mean, there's no sugar in the pill, is it? It's back, and crucially, it's back because it's not shaming anymore. Jim Ratcliffe will not be ashamed today.
Yeah, you know, my parents didn't come on illegal small boats. They were invited here from the Commonwealth because Britain was actually broken at the time in the 50s and they needed the labour and they needed the
talent. But it doesn't matter because that distinction, and I understand why you've made it, but it doesn't matter in the eyes of a racist. They pretend that it's only the small boats they're concerned about, or I don't mind legal migrants, it's illegal ones that I'm cross about. Jim Ratcliffe is not talking about refugees who have yet to have their application processed, and when it is processed, about 80% of people will be accepted because they are proper refugees. They just had their means of getting here closed down by previous Tory governments, and they haven't been reopened by a Labour government. So it's a false syntax anyway. I know you know this, Farah, but it's extraordinary the gulf in understanding between fact and feeling on this issue. Immigration generally, net migration, including everything, has halved in the last couple of years, and the people coming over on small boats are a tiny proportion of the overall figures. And everybody knows this. They're lying when they pretend, "Oh, no, we care about this, but we don't care about, oh, no, we don't mean you." Everybody knows this. When Jim Ratcliffe talks about the country being colonised by immigrants, he means, "I hate seeing brown faces, so many brown faces around the place." He's exactly the same as that Sarah Poaching woman complaining about brown and black faces. Faces like Farah's, faces like Boyoba's, faces like Al's, faces like every caller I've had today except Lee. He hates seeing them. And that's why the comments of people like Nadeem Zahawi are simultaneously hideous and heartbreaking. He means you, mate. Just because you're rich doesn't mean that in the eyes of somebody who doesn't like brown people, you will ever cease to be brown. Suella Braverman, he means you. You've colonised this country. Your parents have colonised this country, and he hates it. And amazingly, Nigel Farage means you as well. When he platforms and promotes these ideas, when he helps normalise these outlooks, he means you as well. Just because you're bending the knee and paying homage to him doesn't mean that he's changed in his heart of hearts since the days when he was at college, attacking everybody foreign and claiming that Hitler had got it right, according to many Jewish contemporaries, something for which he is still to apologise. It's the land that Nigel built we've been examining today, and Farah's teenage girls don't know where they're going to live if he gets into power. And of course, some people are cheering. It baffles me slightly that you still listen to this programme, but this is what you will celebrate. I do understand that. I mean, your own life won't get any better at all, but the closest thing to happiness you're going to get is watching somebody else's life get worse. Watching somebody get deported, watching somebody get shot in Minneapolis. It's the closest thing to happiness you're ever going to have. And rather than thinking about how you're living your life and whether you should perhaps make a few changes, wobble your head a little, and pursue something closer to what our callers have been describing today, you can't. You're so bent by bigotry and by the poison poured into your ears by people like Nigel Farage and Paul Dacre, who I saw in the Royal Courts of Justice yesterday, the former editor of the Daily Mail, answering almost every question he was asked by saying, it wasn't me. It was as if Shaggy was in the witness box. It was extraordinary. It wasn't me. You'd have to ask the journalist concerned about this alleged wrongdoing. It wasn't me. I may have been editor-in-chief of the Daily Mail and the Mail on Sunday, but this happened in the Mail on Sunday, and it has nothing to do with me. It wasn't me. It wasn't me getting jiggy on the bathroom floor. These people have created you. And you are someone whose happiness is so tissue-thin, so inauthentic, that the closest thing to a win you're ever going to have is watching somebody else get hurt. So when Farah tells us that her daughters want to know where they're going to live when reform get in, people cheer. I don't know what they're cheering for except hurt being inflicted upon somebody else. It's 11:48.
LBC, this morning, on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
So many people want to have your say on what Sir Jim Ratcliffe has said. And the Prime Minister, indeed, in part of them, saying that he needs to apologise for this part of the interview with Sky News.
The UK's been colonised by immigrants.
Sir Mel Stry's shadow chancellor of the Exchequer.
Well, I wouldn't use that phraseology. I wouldn't say colonised, but he is certainly speaking to something that is of huge concern.
Martins and Rotherhithe.
I do agree with the sentiment of what he was saying. I got off the train at Seven Sisters. For that 20-minute walk, I did not hear one person speak English.
Sarah in Croydon.
A lot of people that are educated here will go abroad to be doctors and nurses because they get paid better abroad, but then the ones from less developed countries will come here.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Okay, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message.
Mm.
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
At Lidl, we value getting everyone round the table this pancake day. Make sure to top up on toppings from the fresh produce retailer of the year. Us. Such as a 4-pack of lemons and fun-sized apples. Both for just 69p with Lidl Plus. Lidl. More to value. Subject to availability. Selected stores. GB only. Offer ends 18/2/26.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10k, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Forecasting sun with 100% chance of beach. There's still time to get up to £500 off package holidays in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale or get flights from £28 one way. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Limited availability. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
With the Lidl Plus Bakery Spin, you can get a free bakery coupon every time you shop. Just scan Lidl Plus at the checkout, spin, win, and enjoy a free bakery item. Mmm. Lidl. More to value. One spin per customer per day, subject to availability. Ends 25th of Feb, 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
11:52 is the time. I haven't got time to give you a court report from yesterday. I did some actual journalism for the first time in 30 years. Went to the Royal Courts of Justice to watch Paul Dacre, the editor of the Daily Mail, as was, giving evidence in the Well, you're aware of the case. You're also aware that Associated News Limited deny all the claims. But I did. I just missed it myself. I only took my seat shortly after this happened. Paul Dacre, the man who wrote the headline, the man who hates Britain, about David and Ed Miliband's dead war hero father. And then when Ed Miliband complained very movingly and emotionally about this dreadful posthumous maligning of his dead dad who fought in the war, Paul Dacre doubled down on it. Paul Dacre yesterday said to David Sherborne, the prosecution lawyer, "You're very good at smearing the living. You're even better at smearing the dead." Imagine the levels of hypocrisy and absence of self-knowledge you would have to accuse somebody else of smearing the dead, having written the headline, "The Man Who Hated Britain," about a dead war hero, and then double down on it when the dead war hero's son asked you to show the vaguest chinchilla, Keith, of common decency. Anyway, more on that tomorrow, because Henry Riley's here with episode 4, Dear 4 of the Farage Files.
What have you got? Jingle, I like that. Can I start with an apology?
Yes.
Because I got something wrong the other day. I was talking about Dolge, remember the Department of Local Government Efficiency on Kent County Council, and talking about the head there, Matthew Fraser Moat. He's actually resigned from that post because he said to the Financial Times that they had, quote, not actually made any cuts, but happy to clear up the fact that it was about 8 days ago that he actually left Dolge.
Right. So they haven't found any dolging.
They say they have, but the head of Dolge, previous head of Dolge, has said they didn't.
Right. Okay. What else have we found?
Right. If we start with Staffordshire.
How many?
There's 5 today, if that's all right. So I'll be nice and quick.
So we're up to 18. DF4, 18 stories in the big Farage House. Carry on.
In Staffordshire, the man who was the leader, Chris Large, has stepped down from the leadership and cabinet responsibilities. He stood down last week.
This is big.
He said it was due to a family bereavement, but it turns out he is also being investigated over racism allegations.
What? A member of Nigel Farage's outfit being investigated over racism allegations? Cheek! Whatever next?
The BBC has seen confidential emails that show Staffordshire County Council has referred at least one complaint over claims Councillor Large wrote or endorsed racist comments on TikTok.
Mm.
Councillor Large was due to replace Councillor Cooper. Councillor Cooper himself resigned in December over a cloud of racism allegations.
What, a member of Nigel Farage's outfit resigning under a cloud of racism allegations? Whatever next?
Councillor Cooper, in response to a post about David Lammy, said no foreign national or first-generation migrants should be allowed to sit in Parliament. A council spokesperson said they will consider the complaints in line with the council's conduct procedure. So that's Staffordshire.
Wow. So that would be Suella Braverman and Nadeem Zahawi off the... not that Nadeem Zahawi is currently on the reform benches, but that would be a number of their recent sign-ups who would be unable to sit in the House of Commons, were Councillor Cooper to have got his way.
And he is now no longer taking the reform whip.
Well, what else have you got? Staffordshire.
If we go to Leicestershire, which is another one of those authorities,
nearby.
Reform control. This is a curious one because the Reform Council leader has written to Reform UK asking them to suspend a Reform councillor. This is in regards to Joseph Bohm, who used to be the deputy leader of Leicestershire County Council.
Right.
He shared a post saying, "I stand with ICE," just hours after the fatal shooting of the nurse Alex Pretty in Minneapolis last month.
Right.
The Reform leader of that council, Dan Harrison, criticised Councillor Bohm, his colleague, and said he's now actually written to Richard Tice, urging him to kick Joseph Bohm out of the party.
He was deputy leader 10 minutes ago of Leicestershire Council, wasn't he?
Bohm? He was. Yeah. And then he got removed from that post. Then he said he stands with ICE. Now, this letter that's been obtained, Dan Harrison wants him out of the party. He's written to Richard Tice. There have been 79 complaints, he also revealed, made about Reform UK councillors in Leicester since the 24 election. And in the letter that's also been passed on to the BBC, Harrison says about Councillor Bohm, Joseph's reaction, well, he's blaming it all on the woke left-wing fake news or smears. Reform have said we don't provide a running commentary.
So he posted it, and it's all the fault of the woke left-wing?
Yes.
What did they do? Hold a gun to his head and say, post your support for ICE on social media, or we'll woke you to death?
He's talking about the reaction to it being woke and lefty liberals.
Right, people objecting to citizens being murdered by law and order. Law enforcement officers on the streets of America, down with that sort of thing, says only the woke. Okay, next.
There's a few, quick one. Reform have dropped their environment advisor after a couple of weeks. It was revealed in The Guardian on the 30th of January that the Conservative Ben Goldsmith was going to be their environment advisor. They've now had to distance themselves from him because of his, he supports rewilding, and it's not gone down particularly well with farmers, is the understanding. So the National Gamekeepers Organisation is just one organisation who've raised concerns. He's a long-standing environmentalist. Nigel Farage wanted him to write Reform's green manifesto, but after 2 weeks it appears he has been dropped.
And finally,
well, there's actually two more. One other quick one. In Gloucestershire, just a quick, I know we're keeping an eye on the councillors who've left, just to mark your card that Stuart Graham, who is on the Forest of Dean District Council, will now sit as an independent. He said, "I've resigned as a political representative of Reform. I'm still a member of the party." He couldn't say why he's resigned from the group, but a spokesperson from Reform has confirmed that is the case. So just to let you know, a councillor in the last 24 hours has left. And finally, as you said, this is regards to the Reform Jewish Alliance, which is has been launched. And
he's got some front. Has he apologised yet to his Jewish schoolmates who remember him telling them that Hitler was right and making gas chamber jokes in their presence? And supported by now, I think, over 30 contemporaries. Has he apologised to them yet?
Well, Nigel Farage has rejected the allegations of anti-Semitism and racism, but this was a speech that that took place at a central synagogue, the central synagogue in London, attended by around 200 people. This is what happened at one point early in proceedings.
This political organisation.
The Torah says to love the stranger, that we were once strangers in Egypt.
My ancestors led pogroms to incite the refugees.
Let him speak.
Ben Weber didn't fight the Muslim fascists in Cable Street for this. An attack on one minority is an attack on all, I know.
That last clip you heard, or voice you heard, was Carla Bloom, who recalled her own family's history of facing persecution and fighting the far right in the 1930s. In case it was difficult to hear, she said, "My mother didn't fight the Molesley fascists in Cable Street for this." Nigel Farage set up this organisation because it was, he says, after the sort of, he wanted a campaign to release the hostages previously held by Hamas. This particular event, though, there were demonstrators outside from those who were talking about the Dalit connection, as you say, the allegations against Mr. Farage there. Clearly inside as well, there were strong feelings, as you heard from many of those hecklers or protesters or whatever you want to call them as well.
I would call them doughty defenders of decency, actually, and more power to their elbows. Farage has called the memories of racism and anti-Semitic bullying shared by a huge number of his contemporaries complete made-up fantasies. So well done, Carla Bloom and colleagues, for reminding some of the other people assembled there what decency looks like. And well done, Henry Riley, for bringing the Farage files into Dear 4.
Dear 5 tomorrow.
Why have you gone Welsh?
Oh, sorry, I thought that was I thought that's what you were doing, Cardiff.
The Dear 4 of the Farage files. Miss Jower next. And would you think you'll have more tomorrow?
Well, I'll have a look.
We'd get a whole week. It'd be amazing, wouldn't it, if we managed to move to a... And Sir Jim Ratcliffe has apologised. I'm sorry that my choice of language has offended some people in the UK. Sorry, let me rephrase that. Jim Ratcliffe has not apologised for his racism. He has apologised for his choice of language offending some people in the UK and Europe. It wasn't your choice of language that offended people, mate. It was your blatant racism, and also your ignorance, your stupidity, your failure to understand the most basic facts and statistics, and also your incomprehension of what the word colonised actually means. So you can take your apology, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, and you can shove it up your...
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Mayor of Greater Manchester has added to criticism of Sir Jim Ratcliffe's comments about immigration. Sir Jim, who's the co-owner of Manchester United, claimed the UK has been colonised by immigrants. In the past few minutes, he's issued a statement saying that he is sorry that his language has offended people. Andy Burnham, who is the Greater Manchester Mayor, called the remarks inaccurate, insulting and inflammatory. Jay Motti is a Manchester United fan and podcast presenter.
we're at a time now where the team are doing quite well. We've won four of our last five games. But instead, we're talking about the fact our owner has come out with these comments that don't ring true to me. I've lived in the UK all my whole life. I think Sir Jim Ratcliffe is originally from Failsworth. And I'd urge him to come back to Manchester, look around. It's a wonderful, diverse city. And I don't think it's been colonised by immigrants or anyone, to be honest with you. I think he's talking nonsense.
And in the past few minutes, it's understood that the Football Association will examine whether the Manchester United co-owner comments about immigrants have brought the game into disrepute. We'll bring you more of this story throughout the afternoon here on LBC. In other news this lunchtime, a 13-year-old boy has been charged with the attempted murder of two pupils at a school in northwest London. The boys were stabbed at Kingsbury High School on Tuesday afternoon. The teenager, who can't be named, is due to appear before magistrates today. The UK's economy grew by 0.1% in the final 3 months of 2025. Analysts say uncertainty in the lead-up to the budget added to pressure in the quarter. LBC has learned gangs are increasingly targeting jewellers across the UK because of the rising price of gold and silver. More than £2 million worth of necklaces, chains and watches have been stolen from retailers in the first 6 weeks of this year. It's understood gangs from South America are joining groups from Europe in the robberies. You can read more on this story on the LBC app. The government is to carry out a review of the UK's radio industry. It'll assess changes in listener behaviour and the impact of emerging technologies, including artificial intelligence. The Culture Minister Ian Murray has told LBC it aims to secure and protect the future of radio.
What we want to try and do is make sure we're protecting the listener, making sure they can access radio wherever they are and wherever they want to listen to is the key driver for any of these kind of reviews. And what we want to do is a government working with the industry. So, for example, listening in the car is a place where most people access their radio. They listen to LBC in the car in terms of the debates. They listen to music. We need to make sure we have a regulatory environment that protects that, but also take into account that the regulations and the relationships have to be fit for the future.
And Thomas Tuchel has signed a new contract to stay on as England manager until the end of Euro 2028. His current deal was due to expire after this summer's World Cup. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 22 at 10,495. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with rain moving northwards. Scotland and the north of England will see some patchy rain and hill snow at times, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious, at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Oh, hallelujah. 5 minutes after 12 is the time. What we won't be addressing this hour is the mystery of when is an apology not an apology. But I'll give you a bit of a clue. It's when it contains an if or a but. Even if the but is silent or the if is silent. It's like, I'm sorry if you're offended. I'm sorry if I've upset you. No, you're not sorry then, are you? You're moving the onus of responsibility onto the person who is offended by, in Jim Ratcliffe's case, blatant racism. Anyway, it is Mystery Hour now. Let's begin Mystery Hour. Those of you tuning in for the podcast, which is extraordinarily popular, by the way, the Mystery Hour podcast, have no idea what I was just talking about. So my apologies and my greetings to you. This is your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial, or indeed in your podcast library. People will ring in, although not if you're listening on the podcast, which is very popular, by the way, and then other people will ring in and answer their questions. Because the bit I missed out was that the first people who ring in will ask questions, and then the second people who ring in will answer. So what happens is people ring in with questions, right, and then people ring in with answers, right? And that's Mystery Hour. That's number wank. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need to join in. The winner, or rather, my favourite. Are we on TikTok, Keith? Are we not doing TikTok anymore? Is that another one of our enthusiasms that disappeared? You can't look anything up. Why have you written that on the screen? You've never done that before. Are you getting all involved in Mystery Hour now just because you want one of these? You see, you're not getting one. You have to buy it like everybody else. A Mystery Hour. What's that noise? Ooh, it's the tin. It's the Mystery Hour Travel Edition. It comes in a tin. Completely different from the original Mystery Hour. I mean, genuinely completely different from the original Mystery Hour game. It's got a different gameplay dynamic and a different... It's like I'm on QVC, Keith. Did you see? I could do that. It's, right. It's got a different gameplay dynamic and it's got... They're always so enthusiastic on... QVC. And it comes in a tin. The James O'Brien Mystery Hour game. You really want to get one of these in your life. And if you buy it now, you will receive a free cucumber. Or something. You can find out more about the Mystery Hour game. The picture on it, Keith has pointed out, is now so old that I'm in danger of turning into Colonel Sanders out of KFC, where they're using the same picture about 100 years after it was first taken. You can find the terms and conditions for the opportunity to win a Mystery Hour game. You can either get the Mystery Hour game, it's in a tin, or the original box set edition, which is not in a tin. I've got no sound effect for that. But you can find the full terms and conditions at lbc.co.uk, and you can find out more about the games, the one that is in a tin, and also the one that isn't, at mysteryhour.co.uk. Phone lines are open. I've got two phone lines free. Get your skates on, and get your question on the board. Don't hang around. And Callum says, as a bit of a board game nerd, the new version is an objectively better game. You heard it here first. The new version is an objectively better game. So buy it for the person in your life who deserves some joy and enlightenment. In the meantime, we shall indulge in joy and enlightenment together on this programme by inviting you to ring in with a question that needs an answer. If you're new to this, it's a bit like the notes and queries column in The Guardian, I think, which is probably where I nicked it from in the first place. Except that you get an immediate answer. You don't have to wait until next week or next month to get the answer. If you hear somebody else ask a question to which you know the answer, then ring in and provide your answer. Because you could win the game regardless of whether or not you ask a question or answer it. All it has to be is my favourite contribution of the week. And management's decision is final. My decision is final. That's it, I think. 03456060973 is the number you need. And if I've forgotten anything, I will no doubt remember it in about an hour and 1 minute's time. Patricia is in Dowlis.
Good afternoon, James. Hi, yeah, Dowlis in South Wales.
Dowlis, oh, it's yeah, pretty close. I get a bit of a blind spot on Welsh names, Patricia, to be honest with you, but Dowlis is pretty straightforward, pretty much as it looks. Question or answer?
I've got a question for you, please.
Yes.
It's relating to the Winter Olympics.
Oh, topical.
Yes, absolutely. So, in ski jump, in the landing area, you will see little twigs of conifers,
yeah,
which will help, I'd imagine, the skiers identify exactly where the slope is and the angle of the slope. However, in the other, like, crazy aerial events, yeah, such as the Big Air, they use blue dye to effectively do the same job.
I don't understand what the job is. I'm being a bit thick.
Okay, so if you're flying through the air from a dangerous height at dangerous speed, you need to be able to understand exactly where the snow is, and because of the ambient light, it can be difficult to judge exactly where it is, and you don't want to end up like doing the Lindsay Vonn.
No, that was awful.
Yes, it was. So in ski jump, they use little twigs, probably just because they've always done that, because it's an old sport and it's a crazy sport. But in things like Big Air, they use blue dye.
Is there a sport called Big Air?
I think it's called Big
Air.
Big
Air?
Well, it's basically extreme sports. So anything that goes in, like, the X Games, so you'll have freestyle skiing, you'll have slope style.
And this is in the Olympics. But is there an event called... Can you be a Big Air gold medalist? Or is it just a generic term for all the sort of snowboarding and X Games style sports?
I think you could be a Big Air gold medalist. I know that the UK came fourth in the ladies' event on...
But it's called Big Air. Big Air.
Big Air, yeah.
It's like Cilla Black describing Bette Lynch.
yeah, absolutely. Big Air.
Big Air. So they use twigs...
A whole different language in
They use twigs for the ski jump.
They do.
And they use other things for everything else. And what?
Blue dye. Yeah.
Big Air and blue dye. Why? I'm going to give everyone a little treat now if you haven't seen it already. Have you ever encountered Joe Tresini's commentaries on the Winter Olympics or the gymnastics?
No, I haven't,
so James. Joe is one of the most lovely people you could ever meet, and he is an extremely funny and talented man, and he, during lockdown, I think it was, started providing commentary on Olympic events. He started with the gymnastics, and I swear to you that you will either cry or laugh so much that a little bit of wee comes out. That's how funny he is. And I absolutely guarantee that if you look him up now, T-R-A-C-I-N-I, Joe Trasini, he's been on Full Disclosure, you will have one of the funniest experiences of your life. And you can have that for nothing, all right?
Thank you. And James, if Michael Eddie the Eagle Edwards phones up, not only does he get a Rayliota, I will buy him a copy of Field of Dreams.
There you go. You can't say fairer than that. That is a wonderful vote of confidence. So there it is. Why do they have twigs on the ski jump and the blue dye on everything else? It's 13 minutes after 12. I'm in a slightly awkward position now because I'm live on the radio. And judging by their faces, my colleagues are completely unaware that both of my screens have just gone blank. But not in a way that happened the other day when something blew up. I have not, no, and nobody spilt anything. I can still see it says applying audit policy configuration policy. So I need someone to tell me who's next on the line. Yeah, I can read. You don't have to shout. Dan in Bristol, question or answer?
Hi there, James. It's a question, please.
Thank God you're here, Dan. I was getting worried for a moment. Carry on.
I'm here. So this is something that is a very important question and something which frustrated me incredibly so the other day. I dived into my favourite bag of crisps, or should I say what I thought was going to be my favourite bag of crisps.
Yeah.
And I picked a green packet of crisps, hoping that they were going to be cheese and onion. Now, to my great disappointment, I started eating them, and they were salt and vinegar. So my question is, why do crisp manufacturers not use the same colour scheme for their flavours of crisp?
Wait, is that a valid question?
I think so.
I mean, why would they?
Well, I thought it was a unified type of thing, really.
Like the NATO alphabet. It's something that everyone had agreed on, and then it would be used as a sort of lingua franca of crisp packaging.
Well, I think about all the other colours, and I can't think of another colour which does this. So, green,
well, what brand were you buying? What brand were you buying?
So Hula Hoops.
And what colour was the packet?
So, it was green.
That's cheese and onion.
Well, no, because Walkers are salt and vinegar.
But Walkers make Hula Hoops.
Everyone knows
green Hula Hoops are cheese and onion.
Well,
and everyone knows green Walkers are salt and vinegar. I don't understand what you're cross about.
Because if you're not choosing these crisps regularly, it's a very confusing thing to you know, you just want to...
I mean, it's not that confusing if you can read.
But you're just picking them out on the whim, you
so
know.
So what colour should it be? Who's going to...
It should be unified. It should be the same.
Yeah, but what colour should it be? What colour should cheese and onion be? Green or blue?
Blue.
Why?
Because Walkers...
Who's made Walkers the big cheese and onion around here?
Well, if they're making the same crisp... Different crisps.
Why is green about salt and vinegar? The sea is blue, it's got salt in it. Why is salt and vinegar not blue?
There's nothing
green about salt and vinegar.
They are blue. Salt and vinegar are blue.
No, they're green.
Well, it depends which crisp it is, isn't it? This is incredibly, incredibly frustrating.
It's not incredibly, incredibly frustrating. It's mildly diverting.
No.
Yes. Golden Wonder. Golden Wonder. Blue for salt and vinegar. Green for cheese and onion. So you've got... Why are you going all Walkers when you could have gone Golden Wonder?
Well, I think this is a wonderful question, and...
I'm not going to lie to you. It's growing on me, actually, as a question. What are Tatoes?
I don't know.
The Irish crisps.
Well, I'm not Irish.
Salt and vinegar. Well, that's all right. I mean, flipping out, you don't have to be Irish to eat Irish crisps, do you?
Well, if I was Irish, If I went for this Irish crisp, I'd look at
blue.
The colour and
you'd go blue. You'd go blue because you want salt and vinegar, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, so, yeah, OK. I mean, I don't know that anyone's ever going to be able to answer this question, but that's often the way with mystery. I would ask it anyway. Why don't we have inter-crisp agreement on colour coding and flavour? Why aren't all the flavours the same cut? No, but you understand the question. Why do crisp manufacturers make crisps that are packet? Why aren't all the salt and vinegars the same colour and all the cheese and onion? Why are they inconsistent on this? Why do they do this? Because it's really upset Dan. Do you know what? This hasn't happened in years. It's 12:17. I've got three phone lines empty. So some people have been politely told to sling their rooks. But also, because we did an interview with Henry Reilly, we did a feature with Henry Reilly. It means that the phones are a bit slower to start than they usually are on Mystery House. So by the time I finish saying this, it'll be too late for you to do anything about it. But if you were to dial in now, rather than texting me to complain that you can't get through, you would have a better than usual chance at 12:18 of getting on the board. And the number you need, as always, is 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
With a Little Plus Bakery spin, you can get a free bakery coupon every time you shop. Just scan Little Plus at the checkout, spin, win, and enjoy a free bakery item. Lidl, more to value. One spin per customer per day, subject to availability. Ends 25th of Feb, 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
The Volkswagen Fantabulous, Fandabby-dozy, Fandang-a-ding-dong fortnight is here.
Stop. We've been through this, Harry. It's the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Much snappier.
Oh, okay. From the 2nd to the 16th of February, the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight gives you an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit on top of existing offers on the Polo, Golf, Tiguan and our all-electric ID 3, 4 and 5 with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. It's the final weekend of the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Hurry, offer ends this Monday. Better?
Perfect.
Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 20 minutes after 12. Ian Payne, I don't know if you listen to him in the early mornings on LBC. If you don't, you really should. Man's a genius. He's done a phone-in on your favourite crisp flavour, I think, hasn't he? I'd be amazed if he hadn't. Absolute magical radio. We're not doing that here because it's Mystery Hour. And we never will, sadly, until I return to my spiritual home at North Norfolk Digital Radio. But it's a funny one there. I don't believe anyone has a favourite crisp flavour. So I told you I was pretty pungent. Controversialist on the radio. I don't think anyone's got a favourite crisp flavour. I think it depends entirely on mood. And it may, but here it is. Eleanor's found it. It was in October of last year. Skips are Britain's best value crisps, according to a new crisp index. This is the early breakfast show, pre-rundown, producer, Frederick Hall. Audience question, what's your favourite crisp? Someone promote that man. Someone give Frederick Hall a pay rise. Well, please, that is perfect radio. There is no finer phone-in. In fact, you know, I say to you that this job is widely misunderstood because it's actually really easy to get the phones to ring. That's a good example. Everyone would ring in on that. But crucially, it would be much more interesting than a racism phone-in where people can ring in and be a bit racist. Because that would actually be really interesting. You could have a meaningful debate about crisp flavours, except I do like a skip, actually. Skips are lovely. But you've got to be in the right mood. You've got to be in the right mood. So no one has a favourite flavour of skips. You just have the one that suits your mood. And it may well be that 90% of the time, salt and vinegar suits your mood. But that's not your favourite crisp. Because if I caught you in one of those 10% windows, it would probably be cheese and onion. And then you've got the combination of genre. I mean, you could say a cheesy what's it is your favourite crisp, when technically it's not a crisp at all. You see what I mean? We could be here for hours. 22 minutes after 12 is the time. Phil's in Harrogate. Phil, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Phil.
When they built the canals back in the 1800s, where did they get the water from to fill them?
Well, the sky.
But that would take ages, wouldn't it?
They rooted rivers, didn't they?
Yeah, but wouldn't you just have lots of empty rivers then?
No.
I can understand the ones that go to sea, right? The Manchester Ship Canal, loads of water available there. But Skipton to Leeds and those canals, it must have taken a long time.
Well, I know the Grand Union quite well. Yeah. Which I could probably walk from my home in Brentford to my mum's place in Kidderminster going down the Grand Union Canal. I might do it one day when I've retired. Certainly at my end of the Grand Union Canal, it's the River Brent and the canal actually interchange at times. So the canal is just a sort of... at that bit of the Grand Union Canal, just before it reaches the River Thames, there are parts when it is the River Brent and parts where the River Brent... just Occam's razor says it must be that the... because the water hasn't been conjured up by magic or a scientific experiment. It must have come from the rivers. It must have come from where the water was previously. So maybe when they started filling up...
canal?
Yeah, but you would at first, perhaps. Maybe the rivers did go down, but then it evened out.
Yeah, I think you're just solving one problem at the expense of another.
I don't think I am. I mean, it's Occam's razor. What else could it be? So when you first...
I don't know. That's why I rang.
So here's the thing, right? So near me, there's a big development that's just been built, and it has a new key for houseboats, right? And that was previously, there was no water there at all. So on one day, and I bloody missed it, Phil. I was determined to be there for it, but they did it while I was on the radio there. Ingrates. I wanted to see what happened for the reason you described, when they broke the bank, as it were, and opened up the new channel that would see the key outside Sam's Diner, where I had my dinner last night, actually, an exceptional restaurant. Well done to everybody involved. I wanted to see what would happen when they broke the bank and the water would flood in to fill up the new marina, you could call it, if you were an estate agent. And I missed it. But it did fill up. And in that moment, probably, the canal went down a bit, or the River Brent went down a bit. Was it on the canal or the River Brent? It's exactly the bit I was just telling you about, Phil. It's the bit where it's hard to say whether it's part of the Grand Union Canal or part of the River Brent, because it's actually both. And the water all flooded into the new marina, some apartments still available, and it didn't mean that the sea went down or the whole river. So I just think that's how water works.
Well, I understand the sort of gravitational effect of water, but I still think if you filled a whole canal, you'd end up with an empty river. So
I don't think you'd end up. I think this is no.
Where did the water come from?
Yeah, I don't think you would end up with an empty river, because the river would fill up again. It would back up, wouldn't it? Wherever the water is coming in from, that's filled up the river has reached a natural equilibrium, and it would just fill up again to the level that it was before. Because that's how. I mean, I appreciate saying that's how rivers work. Is a suboptimal answer to your question, but I think someone will explain it more intelligently than I have managed to, and it will still boil down.
Maybe my question will be better asked, James, if it were, how did they do it? Did they do it in sections? Did they manage the process? Did they just pull a big plug and the whole canal filled up at once? Or, you know, did they fill it as they dug it, or did they dig it all and then fill it? I just don't...
No, I mean, you're getting complicated now. They dug it and then filled it. So you dig it and then you breach it and then it fills up. But, anyway, someone will know the answer to this. And isn't going to be me. Or you.
Or me.
So, but I like it. I'm a big fan of canals, actually.
Me too. Fantastic places.
They are. And they're a bit, you know, I like bridges and cranes a lot more than is probably healthy. And it's because I like the way that they show humankind's dominion over nature. Nature could destroy us in a heartbeat, of course, with hurricanes and acts of God and all the rest of it. But bridges and cranes and canals show us that we can beat nature sometimes. We can actually harness nature for our own ends, even as it defies the laws of physics, or deploys, I suppose, the laws of physics. Phil, what a lovely question. Thank you very much. 12:27 is the time. Lee's in Crowford. Lee, question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello, Lee.
Hiya. I was watching one of my all-time favourite war movies the other day.
Oh, yes.
Cross of Iron.
Oh, yes.
James Coburn. And they kept referencing, because it's Russians and Germans, they kept referencing the motherland and the fatherland. Mm. I understand which one is which, but I don't know why. Why is one the motherland and one the fatherland?
And when was it decided? Or, I mean...
Exactly, I have no idea of the origin. I didn't want to look it up.
We're a motherland, aren't we? We never call it that, but Britannia is a woman, so I presume that Britain is a she.
Yes, but I've just always...
Germany's a he, Russia is a she.
German
is
a she. Fatherland.
Yeah, fatherland, the father. For you...
The fatherland.
The war is over. Yeah, you're on. I like that.
Yeah,
why? Curious. How was it decided? What's it got to do? It's impossible Mark in Barrow in Furness might know the answer to that one. We shall see. How many times do you think you've watched Cross of Iron?
About 30 times.
Are you playing marbles or eating crisps?
I've got my Lego out. Having a bad day today, so I'm using my Lego. I'm building the Enterprise.
Oh.
And it's a big beast.
Yeah.
3,500 pieces.
Is it really?
3,600 pieces, and because I'm having a bit of a bad time at the moment, so I'm using this to calm me down.
I'm sorry to hear that. What a brilliant idea, though. What a brilliant idea to use that.
Yeah, my new partner bought it for me, and she went, this will help calm me down.
It will. What is today a bad day for a reason, or am I being unduly curious?
No, that's fine. My ex is getting out. Well, she got released from prison this morning. It's domestic violence.
Oh, mate.
Against me and my three-year-old daughter. So I've got her... Got my new partner. We're getting married in a few months.
There you go.
And it's all good. So, but it's just one of those days today because she's got out and it's hit me quite hard. So.
No, of course it has. I'm so glad I can put a smile on your face, even briefly during this trial, mate. All right. My mate Matthew, who puts together the YouTube version of the program, he does the YouTube edit. He just got the Death Star. He just did the Death Star over Christmas.
Oh, nice.
I know. It's flipping enormous.
Trouble is, I'm more of a Star Trek than a Star Wars.
Clearly. Do you know what Keith's doing?
No.
Keith has ordered Lego, bespoke, and he's building a Lego version of his own flat.
Oh, my God, that is so cool.
It's so clever, isn't it?
That is so cool.
I know. There you go. That could be your next project.
I absolutely love that.
I know. I've told him he should put something online and become a bit of it. It's really good as well. I mean, it is, you know, it's to scale pretty much. Give or take.
Well, I've got a BB-5 to do next, the Bond one.
Oh, smartness. All right. Well, let me detain you no longer. Go and give your bag a shake.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, Lee. And you take care of yourself. It is 12:30 and all human life is here. So, with your headlines, is Amelia Cox.
The co-owner of Man United, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, has apologised if he offended some people after claiming Britain has been colonised by migrants. He's been under pressure from a string of high-profile politicians, including the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer. A 13-year-old boy has been charged with attempted murder after two boys were stabbed at a school in northwest London. The teenager, who can't be named, is due to appear before magistrates. And LBC has learnt South American gangs are increasingly targeting jewellers across the UK because of the rising price of gold and silver. More than £2 million worth of necklaces, chains and watches have been stolen from retailers in the first 6 weeks of the year. LBC weather, cloudy for most this afternoon with spells of rain. Sunny spells developing in the southwest but turning windy. Patchy rain in Scotland and North England, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Hey, dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
Big motoring world are big on choice. But what does that mean for you? Well, we have thousands of cars in stock. So let's say you want a Mini, an electric one, in black, with a panoramic roof, Apple CarPlay, heated leather seats, rear view camera. Yep, there it is. Being big means we're more likely to have the right car for you. Big Motoring World, we're big on choice. See website for nearest store.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, so my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12:33 is the time you're listening to James. Well, you're listening to Mystery Hour, which we should continue with Toot Sweet. A lot of love coming in for Lee, who has almost certainly bagged himself a Mystery Hour board game this week, but there is still time for somebody to overtake him. Will's in Northwich. Will, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
I'm calling from Cheshire, but I was born and raised in Leicester, James.
Ah,
the home of
Walker's Crisps, yes.
As you probably, I don't know whether you know, but Walker's started out, and still is, I think, a butcher's shop in Leicester city centre.
Right.
And my late father ran an advertising agency, and Walker is, I think, a butcher's shop in Leicester city centre.
Right.
And my late father ran an advertising agency, and Walker's wanted to launch Crisps. And it was my late father's job to arrange which colour packets they go into the different flavours.
Shut up.
No, very proud of...
Are you serious?
Serious, yeah. And obviously ready salted, red, goes without saying.
Oh, yeah.
And then we had a debate about cheese and onion because one of her rivals, if I'm allowed to say it, Golden Wonder, I believe their packets were green.
That's right, yeah.
And so he came to us one evening and says, when I say cheese, what colour do you think? And we say blue. Blue is blue cheese. You don't think green cheese. You want to eat green cheese.
Yellow cheese, though.
Yeah, but blue cheese is more popular. I mean, whether it's, obviously some people like it or don't, but they associate the colour blue with cheese more. And
I don't know that I agree with. I don't. I mean, I don't want to argue with you. But cheddar, mate, you'd go yellow for cheese. But I mean, obviously you didn't. You went blue. But
he went blue.
I don't want to start
a crisp in the marketplace. Cheese and onion crisps. You look for a blue packet.
You do.
I mean, the rest is self-explanatory. I mean, chicken, obviously, roast, orange colour. Prawn, a sort of pinky colour. But it was a cheese and onion one, which you were struggling with.
How old are you?
I'm a couple of years older than you. I'm 55.
I mean, Walker's was founded in 1948.
Yeah, which was as a butcher's shop. It launched the crisps in the 70s. And
it didn't. Walker's Crisps was founded in 1948.
Yeah.
So the current branding was done in the 70s.
Yeah, they wanted to launch it onto the mainstream market. Okay. Mainstream market in the 70s.
Okay.
But he also gave going into his first advert. I went down for that one in London, and it was a brilliant day out.
I like this. I haven't got enough. I haven't got the history with me to. I mean, I just think Walker's goes back further than that. It's like I'm policing your contribution. It'd be a very odd thing to yank my chain over. So you're going to get a round of applause. But I should give Gary a ring, shall I? Let's see what he remembers. I've got. When are we doing the thing with Gary? Next week, next Tuesday. One day next week, with me and Lineker on stage together doing a gig. I'll remember your dad to him, shall I?
Please do. It's a week today.
A week tonight.
We recorded it in Soho, James, and we went out. We took him out to a tapas, and he was playing for Barcelona at the time. And all the waiters were absolutely mobbing him, and it was a brilliant experience.
Here it is. Your old man personally chose the colours in consultation with the.
And over dinner one night, he says, "I'm struggling with a cheese and onion. When I say cheese and onion, what do we think?" And
you've got to have one of these.
I'm ridiculous. Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
Nicely done, man.
Thank you.
I know, amazing stuff. And do you want to tell me your dad's name so I can I mention it to Gary next Thursday or not? You don't have to.
No, his name was John Langley.
John Langley, top man. Thank you.
No worries, James.
You'd mind how you go. Cheers, Will. Also, a bit of a steward's inquiry into what I said earlier about not having a favourite flavour of crisps. Jennifer and others have pointed out I may in the past have claimed that Seabrook's prawn cocktail was my favourite flavour of crisp. But that was what I meant that day, you see, because that was the mood I was in. And for most of my school days, that was the crisp that I would have favoured. But it's not my favourite crisp, because you might encounter me later today and say, James, would you like a bag of crisps? And I'd say, oh, I could just go some discos. And that, in that moment, would be my favourite crisp. So nobody has a favourite crisp, unless you've only ever eaten one, in which case, how do you know it's your favourite crisp? Because you haven't tried all the others one. You haven't tried all the other ones. There is no such thing as your favourite crisp, just the crisp you fancy in that moment. John Langley would have understood that. Thank you, Will. Tracy's in Liverpool. Tracy, question or answer?
I've got a question, please, James.
Carry on.
I've got a cooking base.
He's right, isn't he? Sorry, I'm getting distracted. He's right. We didn't have Walkers that much when we were kids. We'd have Golden Wonder or Smith. Do you remember the ones with the little blue packets? Walker's crisps were a bit like a mass market. They were a much later arrival. He's absolutely right. I can't believe I was so sceptical. Anyway, sorry, Tracy, where were we?
It's just a quick cooking-based question, please.
Yes.
When I'm cooking, why is it that ginger, fresh ginger,
yeah,
is the only thing that's ever measured in sums?
It drives me nuts.
It's just impossible to get it right.
I did a chili the other night, and it told me to use a thumbnail-sized piece of dark chocolate. What the fudge does that mean?
I've got no idea.
How thick is it?
I do most of the cooking, yeah, but my partner's same. Got bigger hands than me, so he's got a bigger thumb.
Got a thumb
so...
like a Savoy. a thumb-sized piece of ginger. Yeah.
It's not used for anything else.
I just told you, it's used for dark chocolate, but that's the thumbnail-sized piece of chocolate. I thought, what the heck, I don't know what... Why don't they say an amount? Like, weigh it?
Well, exactly. A teaspoon, number of grams...
I want a weight of it. That's a really good question.
Thanks.
I've got the Dishoom cookbook. Have you seen the Dishoom cookbook? Fancy curries. And there's a few things in there that are in this ballpark, where it kind of... Right, Nigella never does this. You're reading a Nigella recipe, you know exactly where you are with Nigella. But in the Dishoom cookbook, which I absolutely love, by the way, don't get me wrong, there are a couple of things that are almost in the eye of the beholder, like a thumb-sized piece of ginger. But on ginger itself, they actually go for the grams. That's why I mention it. So ginger and garlic, very specific grammage, as they say. But yeah, why? I love that question, Tracy. What was the last thing you prepared using ginger?
A katsu curry.
Lovely. I have got ginger in my drink today. I'm now drinking out of my chilies bottle. And it was about a thumb-sized piece, actually. I put a little bit too much in yesterday, between you and me. And I got a little bit, it was about a thumb and a half. And it was just a little bit too punchy. Yes, I did get a bit of throat burn. But not today. Today, my ratios, I got one small cucumber, one carrot, a thumb-sized piece of ginger and some apple juice, and it's delicious. But why a thumb? You're on. It's on the board. What a lovely question. No, thank you. 12:41 is the time, and David's in Aberystwyth. David, question or answer?
Hi, James.
Hello,
it's a question.
Carry on.
And not nice to be speaking to you.
Likewise.
Just a cheeky answer before I...
No, you can't do that.
Okay.
That's okay. Right. That's all
right. Right. My question is, it goes back to...
Oh, I sounded all strict then, didn't I? I like that.
You sounded a little bit over-strict.
No, I was not over-strict. This is mischief, mate. You're playing fast and loose with well-established rules. Anyway, carry on.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. I'll abide by your rules.
You will.
It goes back to when I was studying psychology.
Oh, yes.
And we had this amazing professor, Professor Jan Adams, his name was, and this was a module about animal behaviour.
Mm.
And he had a passion for bees. And I remember him doing a whole lecture on bees and their behaviour and how they communicate. And he was talking about, I think it was called, and this is going back several decades now, so correct me if I'm wrong about the name of the dance, but they would perform, I think it was called the waggle dance, where bees would go out and find rich nectar crops and plants.
Right.
It could be a mile away or even 2 miles away.
Yeah, and so the bee comes back to the hive and does a dance that tells all the other bees where to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, so comes back and does this.
I think it's called a waggle dance because most of the movements are from its bum. It kind of waggles its bum. But there's other complicated maneuvers, dance sequences that go on, which explain to the other bees exactly, and I say exactly, I mean probably to the square metre, where this crop is.
Yeah.
And I like to know, I may have missed it, I may have been hung over the next day and missed the next lecture, but I'd like to know how bees do this, whether it's an innate quality that they have, they're born with this ability to decode the dance, or whether they're taught. And if they're taught, how on earth are they taught?
Had to do the thing. I mean, it could be quite obvious. It could be like left a bit, right a bit. And then waggle down straight ahead for a while, and then the amount of time that you leave your tush in that position denotes how much time you should spend heading east, west.
Yeah.
I'm waggling. We're not even on TikTok, are we? This is entirely for the benefit of people watching on YouTube. Hang on, I'm just going to shake the tin. Carry on.
Exactly, it could be something as simple as that.
How does one bee know what the other bee is saying when the bee is waggling its bee bum?
Yeah, is it a learned behaviour?
I love it.
That they know innately from birth.
What's that wonderful book called about bees? It's a novel.
Book about bees?
It's a wonderful book about bees. It's a novel. It's fiction. And it's sort of set, it's a little bit anthropomorphic. It kind of humanises bees. But it's the tale of a bee. What's it called? She did one about dolphins as well, the same writer. It's a wonderful book. It might even be called Bees or Bee or something. I'll come up with the name of it before the end of the programme.
Bee or not to be?
Round of applause. Well played. Sorry, no, it's not called To Be or Not to Be, but I think it does contain the answer to your question. I could be wrong, but either way, I can't remember. But it's a wonderful book.
I'd love to read that book. So
I know you would. That's why I'm desperately racking my brains. Let me see.
If it comes to your memory later on in the show, then
I've only got 15 minutes. So I was hoping someone might have texted it in by now. It will definitely come to me because I'll probably Google it during the break, and that is how I won't be breaking any rules because I won't be actually Googling anything to find out the answer to a question that's been asked. Because that is, how do bees communicate distances and journeys? A map. They give a map to another bee by wiggling their thorax, which is the fancy word for a bee bum. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. It's 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Jim Ratcliffe apologises over his claim the UK is being colonised by immigrants. Liverpool and England player John Barnes joins me. And what did the King know when he paid Andrew's settlement bill?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd deposit regularly into a retirement fund that safely tracks the market.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
I can't believe it!
And you buy a snake and a superbike instead.
Yeah, baby!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV, 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
This Valentine's Day at Lidl, it's easy to get it right. With our range of fresh flowers from £3.99, like a dozen radiant red roses, or Belgian seashell chocolate, just £3.19 with Lidl Plus. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus subject to availability. Selected stores, GB only. Offer ends 18th of February. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away. We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Thinking of buying a new electric car? It can be tough to know where to start. Luckily, the experts have done the work for you. The new smart Hashtag 5 has just been announced as What Car's best family electric SUV of the year. And did we mention that the smart Hashtag 1 and Hashtag 3 are also previous What Car award winners? Work smart, not hard. Test drive Smart's award-winning EV range at smart.com.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:47 is the time. It's called... The book about bees that I couldn't remember the name of is called... The Bees. The Bees. So, I mean, to nick the joke, the bees or not the bees? That is the question. And the bees is the answer. It is not, as some might think, the history of Brentford Football Club. It is instead a novel told entirely from the perspective of a bee, Flora 717, and it's by Laline Paul, L-A-L-I-N-E, new word, Paul with two L's, Laline Paul. So there you go. What we don't know is, was it David who asked that question, David in Aberystwyth, or have I missed one out? Is how bees communicate to each other simply by wiggling. Sam's in Newcastle. Sam, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
So in response to the canal question, a lot of the canals are fed by reservoirs. There are the odd few that are fed by rivers, but the vast majority are fed by reservoirs.
Really?
Yeah, really, yeah.
But, I mean, it, so when they build a new canal, they fill it up with it from a reservoir?
Yeah, which is why...
Go on.
I was going to say, which is why last year, when we had the droughts, we had some issues filling up the canals, so we had to...
Did we? We got too low for the boats?
Yeah, so Leeds and Liverpool Canal had some issues there. So obviously, reservoirs look like... reservoirs for the canals work, some to the ones for drinking water, obviously. They're fed by when it rains and streams and things that run into it.
But are we sure... Because you're obviously correct about how they're fed now. Are we sure that when they dug a new canal... They would have got all the water from a reservoir rather than from a nearby river?
Yeah, it would have been a bit of both. I mean, some of the reservoirs we've got are nearly 200 years old, so the same, similar sort of age to the canals. I don't know if you remember Todbrook Reservoir from 2019. We had a, there was the breach there.
Yes, I do.
That was all over it, where the Chinook helicopter came in and dropped a few sandbags in. And I mean, we're still working on that now at the moment.
Wow. Qualifications? I think you've given us a clue.
Yeah, we're for the Canal and River Trust.
I love that. What does your average day involve?
So we're doing lots of projects, as you can imagine. Lots of the network's really old, so we're always either trying to do some... retrospective repairs or do some proactive maintenance. So we're working on a load of reservoirs since we had that breach. We've been going around and doing a lot of work trying to basically upgrade, modernise a lot of the reservoirs, which is where a lot of our money has gone over the last few years.
That's really interesting. Do you, this is a slightly Alan Partridge-y question, but I think, do you have a favourite canal?
I live in the Potteries, the capital of ceramics, so obviously the Trent and Mersey and the Caledon.
Have you got the steps near you? Where are the steps, the big steps?
Oh, there's a few, I think, about further up north in Cheshire.
I thought there was one near you. Is there not one in Burton, around there? Or have I dreamt that? I've imagined that.
Possibly. Top of my head, I'm not 100%
sure. No, don't worry. I mean, that's not your business, really, the locks, is it? You're more on the water side of things.
Yeah. You'd be surprised, actually, James, how much is actually done with the canals.
Yeah, I would and I wouldn't, because I go to the... There's one near me on the Grand Union in Brentford. There's a little office for your lot are there with the volunteers, and I pop in there quite often and see quite a lot of what's going on. I find it absurd. I don't know why I find it. Why are they so interesting, do you think?
What canal? Yeah. Like, part of our history, I mean, particularly in Stoke, you know.
Yeah, of course.
You know, Wedgwood built the canals there for the pottery, for the coal, you know, and obviously basically started the Industrial Revolution. So,
have you ever been to the Black Country Museum near Dudley?
I have. It's brilliant.
It's mad, absolutely, isn't it? Yeah, I've done that. Crazy. I've done the thing on the boat where you can walk it through the tunnel. You use your legs up on the roof.
Oh, when you're, yeah, legging it, yeah. Yeah, we've got two. We've got the Hare Castle Tunnel, and there was one there, which Telford built, where you used to have to leg it. But yeah, it's amazing, absolutely amazing.
This is a great call. Have a round of applause. Lovely stuff. Mark's in Beckenham. Mark, question or answer?
Answer, James.
About
5-10 years ago, I was given a course for cooking. I think it was a Jamie Oliver course.
Oh, yes.
For Christmas, and I went along, and they said, use a thumbnail size. I said, why do you use a thumbnail size? And they said, well, generally it's because you can't fit some ingredients in a teaspoon and it's about the size of a teaspoon.
But why would you not just weigh it?
No idea. That's what the chef said to me. So, I asked him the question and I said,
He
said it's about the size of a teaspoon.
You can't put it in on a teaspoon because it's so knobbly.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the time you peeled it, and so you just go for a thumb-sized piece. And
that's what he told me.
I believe you. I absolutely believe you.
Thank you.
Round of applause.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much.
Have a great day.
And you too. Have we run out of answers now? I still need... We've done the crisps, we've done the canals. We haven't done Patricia's question about the Olympics. Have we not got that? And Fatherland and Motherland. We've done the ginger and the bees. So we need Fatherland and Motherland, the Olympics and the bees. Mark's in. Here he is. I knew it. I predicted this, Mark.
Yeah, hi. You called for me, and here I am.
I said you'd know this one.
Well, this is Fatherland and Motherland, obviously.
Yes.
And it seems to relate mostly to the gender of the noun for land or country.
Oh, yes.
And so, for example, in a lot of languages, the word for land is a feminine noun, like Latin terra. And in those cases, the expression is motherland.
Okay.
There are occasional exceptions to this, but that is the main pattern. Or if the name of the country is obviously feminine in form, like Britannia, with that A ending. Now, I mean, there are the languages with fatherland.
What was that noise in the background just then? Sorry.
Sorry, was that me? I don't know.
What was it?
If it was me, I'm sorry.
No, don't apologise. I'm just curious. Was it your doorbell?
I don't know what it was.
Okay.
It was behind me.
Carry on. It's behind you! Go on.
Languages like the Germanic languages, where the word for land is mainly neuter, Land in German, or sometimes masculine, and they are the languages where you get fatherland. Or you tend to get fatherland. Now, there have been times to shift away from this. During the Napoleonic War, there was a movement in Germany to speak of Germany, the Great Mother, gathering her children around the smaller German states to fight against Napoleon. But it didn't last. Once things settled down, it went back to being fatherland. And there are cases where there is no real word for motherland or fatherland. So, for example, in Russian, there isn't really such a word. The word for land is feminine.
There you go.
So, and that's why you get Mother Russia.
Mother Russia. And that's, I think, what the question that Lee asked was referring to.
So that's basically the pattern. There are exceptions, but that's the overall pattern.
Qualifications?
Professional linguist of long standing.
Professional linguist of long standing. A mystery hour legend. I think I need to issue an apology. Anybody who is listening on very good quality headphones, when I was talking earlier to Tracy about ginger, I did actually take a swig of my ginger drink, and I think it just very slightly repeated on me. a moment ago, and you may have picked that up if you are listening on very good quality headphones, so I'd like to apologise for that. Thank you. We still need a question to the answer of why on the high jump they use twigs, bits of fern, to denote the thing. In ski jump, instead of, and then they use blue dye on all the other snow sports. Trevor is in Lenchwick, in Worcestershire. Whereabouts in Worcestershire?
It's just outside Evesham, James.
Oh, okay, yeah. So the other way from me, then. It's not that part of Worcestershire.
Yeah, I'm nowhere near Kidderminster, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, you don't have to sound so relieved, mate. It has its moments. Get yourself down the carpet museum during half term. Trevor, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
You had a question about the waggle dance with bees.
I did. The bees or not the bees?
Yeah, I'm a beekeeper, and last time I spoke to them, they couldn't really explain...
Yeah, all right. All right, clever clubs.
They couldn't really explain to me, but we assume that it's all done through social learning. They observe... Typically, when they're about 8 days old, they start learning from experienced older forager bees who are coming back from finding all the nectar and everything, and they learn that. They learn that at that point by watching them, quite simply. And they need to observe these experienced dancers, we think, so that they avoid making large mistakes. Because it shows them where to go, what the quality of the food is like, and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
So really detailed communication, then, just through the medium of what...
Oh, you'd be amazed.
The human equivalent would be dance.
They're very clever. They're very clever.
You love your bees, don't you?
Yes.
Sorry, no. What was that in the background there? Someone heckling
That's
you?
That's my wife shouting at me.
What's
Shut
she
up.
Shouting?
She's shouting there's an answer from somebody called Trevor on the phone.
And that's you?
I know, she doesn't know it's me, though.
So she's shouting at you, there's a bloke called Trevor answering the question about bees on the radio, as if it's like an amazing coincidence.
That's right, yeah.
She didn't recognise your voice?
Probably not,
but
no.
She knows now that it's you, does she? Or do you
she
want to take a moment
indeed.
To tell her?
Well, no, she does know.
What's your wife's name, Trevor, if I may?
Her name is Marcy.
Hi, Marcy! Hello, Marcy! Marcy! Round of applause for Trevor.
thank you very much, James.
Thank you very much. Love to Marcy. It is coming up to 12:59. That's it for me. Just the Olympics one that wasn't answered, and quite a lot of competition in the end. On a normal day, Will would be getting the game, wouldn't he? I think, but Lee's contribution just touched so many different parts that it is the mystery game. Whether you want the original board game or the one in a tin. That will be making its way to Lee in Crowford later today. And that is it from me. Hello?
What was the Olympic question?
Why do that? You fancy yourself on this
one? I don't know. You never
know. So on the ski jump, they have bits of fern on the ground so that the jumpers kind of know where the snow is, as it were. Otherwise, the ambient light would make it impossible to know when you were about to hit. But on all of the other ones, they use blue dye to denote the snow, as it were. Do we know why?
No.
Thank you. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Flare, which is free, as is the LBC app. All the latest news, videos and opinion podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily and Full Disclosure, the best bits from this show every day. Download the LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick. But now, it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much indeed, the woman who did not win the pub quiz. At 3 today, there's been such a moving outpouring of grief after the death of James Vanderbeek, the Dawson's Creek actor. I thought we could talk about grief at 3 and how we survive it, because we all experience it. At 2, what exactly did the King know about his brother Andrew when he gave him over £1 million towards his settlement with Virginia Giuffre? But first up after the news, something of a Tony Blair apology from Man United owner Jim Ratcliffe, saying immigrants are, quote, colonising the United Kingdom. Whatever you think about migrant numbers, perfectly legitimate conversation to be had about that, at least know some history, Jim, and a modicum of maths. Just a little bit of maths would have helped.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
from Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The co-owner of Man United, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, says he's sorry his language offended people after claiming Britain has been colonised by migrants. The Prime Minister had called for him to apologise, saying the comments were offensive and wrong. Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, said the remarks were inaccurate, insulting and inflammatory. The Migration Minister, Mike Tapp, has given his reaction to LBC.
Well, I think they're inappropriate comments, and this is a man that's not even in the country. He's living in Monaco after backing Brexit, so it's all a bit odd. My view on this is that we need to restore order and control to the immigration system. That's exactly what we're doing, but we're doing that within our British values, which is, of course, having a firm system that's fair also, and that dialing up the rhetoric and being divisive is not helpful to anybody in this country. It's about being decent, and that's what we are as a government.
A 13-year-old boy has been remanded into youth detention after appearing in court charged with attempted murder. Two school children are still being treated in hospital after being stabbed at a school in Brent in northwest London on Tuesday. The teenager can't be named because of his age and will appear at the Old Bailey at the end of the month. The UK's economy grew slightly by 0.1% in the final 3 months of 2025. Analysts say uncertainty in the lead-up to the budget added to pressure in the quarter. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has told LBC the government is making a difference.
The 6 cuts in interest rates means that people with a mortgage are going to be paying a bit less than they were before, around £1,400 less for somebody getting a new mortgage or renewing a mortgage. We're creating the conditions for growth by returning stability to the economy and bringing in investment. Is there more to do? Absolutely, but we've created the conditions for growth.
LBC has learnt gangs from South America and Europe are fuelling a surge in attacks on jewellers across the UK. More than £2 million of necklaces, chains and watches have been stolen from retailers in the first 6 weeks of the year. It follows a rise in the price of gold and silver. And Thomas Tuchel has signed a new contract to stay on as England manager until the end of Euro 2028. His current deal was due to expire after the World Cup this summer. Tuchel has been linked with the managerial vacancies at Manchester United and Tottenham. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 12 points at 10,484. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather cloudy for most this afternoon with spells of rain. Sunny spells developing in the southwest but turning windy. Patchy rain for Scotland and northern England. A high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Let's talk, shall we, about the comments that Jim Ratcliffe made, the owner of Man United, about immigration into this country. He has apologised for what he said, his choice of language, and the bare bones of what he said, whilst talking about immigration numbers, whilst talking about the numbers of people not in work in this country. He inflated both figures, as it turned out, but he claimed that the UK had been, his words, colonised by immigrants. The Migration Minister, Mike Tapp, told LBC earlier on that divisive rhetoric like this simply isn't helpful.
Well, I think they're inappropriate comments, and this is a man that's not even in the country. He's living in Monaco after backing Brexit, so it's all a bit odd. My view on this is that we need to restore order and control to the immigration system. That's exactly what we're doing. But we're doing that within our British values, which is, of course, having a firm system that's fair also, and that dialing up the rhetoric and being divisive is not helpful to anybody in this country. It's about being decent, and that's what we are as a government.
Decency, that kind of echoes what the Prime Minister said about Britain, and he said that Sir Jim Ratcliffe should apologise. Well, he made the comments in an interview with Sky News. Take a listen.
If you really want to deal with the major issues of immigration, with people opting to take benefits rather than working for a living, if you want to deal with that, then you're going to have to do some things which are unpopular. and show some courage.
And has this government done that?
No, I think they I don't know whether... I don't know whether it's just the apparatus that hasn't allowed Keir to do it, or he's maybe too nice. He's a nice... I mean, I know Keir. He's a nice man. I like him. It's a tough job, and I think you have to do some difficult things with the UK to get it back on track, because at the moment I don't think the economy's in a good... You can't afford... You can't have an economy with 9 million people on benefits and huge levels of immigrants coming in. I mean, the UK's been colonised. It's costing too much money. It will cause...
It's been colonised?
It'll cause... Well, we've been... Yeah. The UK's been colonised by immigrants, really, isn't it? I mean, the population of the UK was 58 million in 2020. Now it's 70 million. That's 12 million people.
You met recently with Nigel Farage, didn't you?
I did.
Do you think that they would be a kind of a good government if they were to win the next election?
I think Nigel is an intelligent man, and I think he's got good intentions, but in a way you could say exactly the same about Keir when Keir came in. I think it needs somebody who's prepared to be unpopular for a period of time to get the big issues sorted out, would be my view.
Well, just to get a couple of things straight, the UK population has not grown by 12 million since 2020. It's increased by 2.7 million, just below 3 million, definitely higher than all governments have promised to make it. But again, there are reasons why it's grown the way it's grown, and it is not all boats, by the way. Also, the idea that a plan for a football club or a plan for a business like Ineos's business is necessarily a good plan for a country is very debatable indeed. But let's talk about his original comments and that apology of sorts. John Barnes joins me, former Liverpool and England player, one of the best, and played in the England team in 1986 and 1990 World Cup finals. Just always worth mentioning those moments of glory, John. Why don't we?
Just to reminisce.
Yeah, we need
Make
it.
Me feel young.
We need it. We need it. Me too. listen, why do you think so many people fall into language like this when having an otherwise perfectly legitimate conversation about migration numbers in the country employment in the country?
Well, that is why language is very important, because language is meaningful. And of course, we can't conflate colonialism with immigration. And there's a meaningful discussion they had about immigration. And while I do believe that the reason for the working class discontent in England is not immigration, because without immigration of the sort we're seeing now, you still have homeless people, you still have people, you know, you look at the NHS, you look at lack of housing, that has got nothing to do with immigration, but we're looking for a scapegoat, so of course we look to immigrants. That is a completely different subject if you want to have a conversation about that than colonialism, which is what he mentioned, which he's now apologized for. Now, that language is inflammatory, because, you know, colonialism is about exploiting and politically controlling somebody else's country after immigrants moving into a country, as the British and the French and they did hundreds of years ago, and controlling the economic and political environment of that country. That is never going to happen here through immigration. So I suppose that's why it caused a furore, because he said it is being colonized. So of course, you know, it's a completely different situation.
I mean, it's also worth saying, isn't it, that the vast majority